and to beg a boon. There would be no tricks, no stealing, no seduction. Rhys could not even risk looking inside their heads for fear of triggering the inherent wards around the book and destroying it.
"We know war is coming," the oldest said, her voice like crackling leaves. "We have been preparing for it for many years."
It seemed the three others were positioned as observers while the eldest and the golden-haired one led the charge. I said, as calmly and clearly as I could, "The humans in this territory seem unaware of the larger threat. We've seen no signs of preparation." Indeed, Azriel had gleaned as much these weeks, to my dismay.
"This territory," the golden one explained coolly, "is a slip of land compared to the vastness of the continent. It is not in our interests to defend it. It would be a waste of resources."
"No.
No, that,"
Rhys drawled.
"Surely the loss of even one innocent life would be abhorrent."
The eldest queen folded her withered hands in her lap.
"Yes. To lose one life is always a horror, but war is war. If we must sacrifice this tiny territory to save the majority, then we shall do it."
I didn't dare look at my sisters, look at this house that might very well be turned to rubble. I rasped, "There are good people here." The Golden Queen sweetly parried with,
"Then let the High Fae of Prithian defend them."
Silence. And it was Nesta who hissed from behind us,
"We have servants here, with families. There are children in these lands, and you mean to leave us all in the hands of the Fae?"
The eldest one's face softened.
"It's no easy choice, girl."
"It is the choice of cowards," Nesta snapped.
I interrupted before Nesta could dig us a deeper grave. "For all that your kind hate ours, you'd leave the Fae to defend your people?"
"Shouldn't they?"
the golden one asked, sending that cascade of curls sliding over a shoulder as she angled her head to the side.
"Shouldn't they defend against a threat of their own making?"
A snort.
"Should Fae blood not be spilled for their crimes over the years?"
"Neither side is innocent," Rhys countered calmly. "But we might protect those who are. Together."
"Oh?"
said the eldest, her wrinkles seeming to harden, deepen.
"The High Lord of the Night Court asks us to join with him, save lives with him, to fight for peace. And what of the lives you have taken during your long, hideous existence? What of the High Lord who walks with darkness in his wake and shatters minds as he sees fit?"
A crow's laugh.
"We have heard of you, even on the continent, Rhysand. We have heard what the Night Court does, what you do to your enemies. Peace? For a male who melts minds and tortures for sport, I did not think you knew the word."
Wrath began simmering in my blood. Embers crackled in my ears. But I cooled that fire I'd been slowly stoking these past weeks and tried. "If you will not send forces here to defend your people, then the artifact we requested—"
"Our half of the book, child," the crone cut me off, "does not leave our sacred palace. It has not left those white walls since the day it was gifted as part of the treaty. It will never leave those walls, not while we stand against the terrors in the north."
"Please," was all I said. Silence again. "Please," I repeated. Emissary. I was their emissary, and Rhys had chosen me for this, to be the voice of both worlds. I was turned into this, into a fairy, because one of the commanders from Highburn killed me. Through our bond, I could have sworn I felt Rhys flinch. "For 50 years, I pushed on, "she terrorized Prithian. And when I defeated her, when I freed its people,
She killed me. And before she did, I witnessed the horrors that she unleashed on human and fairy alike. One of them, just one of them, was able to cause such destruction and suffering. Imagine what an army like her might do. And now their king plans to use a weapon to shatter the wall, to destroy all of you. The war will be swift and brutal. And you will not win. We will not win. Survivors will be slaves, and their children's children will be slaves. Please, please give us the other half of the book.
The eldest queen swapped a glance with the golden one before saying gently, placatingly,
"You are young, child. You have much to learn about the ways of the world."
"Do not," Rhys said with deadly quiet, "condescend to her."
The eldest queen, who was but a child to him, to his centuries of existence, had the good sense to look nervous at that tone. Rhys's eyes were glazed, his face as unforgiving as his voice as he went on.
"Do not insult Feyre for speaking with her heart, with compassion for those who cannot defend themselves, when you speak from only selfishness and cowardice."
The eldest stiffened.
"For the greater good,
many atrocities," Rhys purred, "have been done in the name of the greater good."
No small part of me was impressed that she held his gaze. She said simply,
"The book will remain with us. We will weather this storm."
"That's enough,"
Moore interrupted. She got to her feet. And Moore looked each and every one of those queens in the eye as she said,
"I am the Morrigan. You know me, what I am. You know that my gift is truth. So you will hear my words now and know them as truth, as your ancestors once did."
Not a word. Moore gestured behind her, to me.
"Do you think it is any simple coincidence that a human has been made immortal again, at the very moment when our old enemy resurfaces? I fought side by side with Miriam in the war, fought beside her as Jurian's ambition and bloodlust drove him mad and drove them apart. Drove him to torture Clithia to death, then battle Amarantha until his own."
She took a sharp breath, and I could have sworn Azrael inched closer at the sound. But Moore blazed on.
"I marched into the Blackland with Miriam to free the slaves left in that burning sand, the slavery she had herself escaped, the slaves Miriam had promised to return to free. I marched with her, my friend, along with Prince Draken's legion. Miriam was my friend, as Feyre is now. And your ancestors, those queens who signed that treaty, they were my friends too. And when I look at you,"
she bared her teeth,
"I see nothing of those women in you. When I look at you, I know your ancestors would be ashamed. You laugh at the idea of peace, that we can have it between our peoples."
Moore's voice cracked, and again Azrael subtly shifted nearer to her, though his face revealed nothing.
"There is an island in a forgotten, stormy part of the sea. A vast, lush island, shielded from time and spying eyes, and on that island Miriam and Draken still live, with their children, with both of their peoples. Fae and human and those in between, side by side, for 500 years they have prospered on that island, letting the world believe them dead."
"Moore," Rhys said, a quiet reprimand.
A secret, I realized, that perhaps had remained hidden for 5 centuries. A secret that had fueled the dreams of Rhys and of his court. A land where 2 dreamers had found peace between their peoples, where there was no wall, no iron wards, no ash arrows. The Golden Queen and Ancient Queen looked to each other again. The Ancient One's eyes were bright as she declared,
"Give us proof. If you are not the High Lord that rumor claims, give us 1 shred of proof that you are, as you say, a male of peace."
There was 1 way. Only 1 way to show them, prove it to them. Velaris.
My very bones cried out at the thought of revealing that gem to these spiders.
Rhys rose in a fluid motion. The queens did the same. His voice was like a moonless night as he said, "You desire proof?"
I held my breath, praying he wouldn't tell them.
He shrugged, the silver thread in his jacket catching the sunlight. "I shall get it for you. Await my word and return when we summon you."
"We are summoned by no one, human or fairy,"
the Golden Queen simpered. Perhaps that was why they'd taken so long to reply, to play some power game.
"Then come at your leisure," Rhys said,
with enough of a bite that the queen's guards stepped forward. Cassian only grinned at them, and the wisest among them instantly paled.
Rhys barely inclined his head as he added,
"Perhaps then you'll comprehend how vital the book is to both of our efforts."
"We will consider it once we have your proof."
The Ancient One nearly spat the word. Some part of me reminded myself that she was old and royal, and smacking that sneer off her face would not be in our best interests.
"That book has been ours to protect for 500 years. We will not hand it over without due consideration."
The guards flanked them, as if the words had been some predetermined signal. The Golden Queen smirked at me and said,
"Good luck."
Then they were gone. The sitting room was suddenly too big, too quiet. And it was Elaine, who sighed and murmured,
"I hope they all burn in hell."
Chapter 41. We were mostly silent during the flight and winnowing to Valaris. Amryn was already waiting in the townhouse, her clothes rumpled, face unnervingly pale. I made a note to get her more blood immediately. But rather than gather in the dining or sitting room, Rhys strolled down the hall, hands in his pocket, past the kitchen, and out into the courtyard garden in the back. The rest of us lingered in the foyer, staring after him, the silence radiating from him, like the calm before a storm.
"It went well, I take it," Amryn said.
Cassian gave her a look and trailed after his friend. The sun and arid day had warmed the garden, bits of green now poking their heads out here and there in the countless beds and pots. Rhys sat on the rim of the fountain, forearms braced on his knees, staring at the moss-flecked flagstone between his feet. We all found our seats in the white-painted iron chairs throughout. If only humans could see them, fairies sitting on iron. They'd throw away those ridiculous baubles and jewelry. Perhaps even Elaine would receive an engagement ring that hadn't been forged with hate and fear.
"If you're out here to brood, Rhys," Amryn said from her perch on a little bench, "then just say so and let me go back to my work."
Violet eyes lifted to hers, cold, humorless.
"The humans wish for proof of our good intentions, that we can be trusted."
Amryn's attention cut to me.
"Feyre was not enough?"
I tried not to let the words sting.
No, I had not been enough. Perhaps I'd even failed in my role as emissary.
"She is more than enough," Rhys said with that deadly calm,
and I wondered if I'd sent my own pathetic thoughts down the bond. I snapped my shield up once more.
"They're fools. Worse, frightened fools."
He studied the ground again, as if the dried moss and stone made up some pattern no one but him could see.
Cassian said, "We could depose them. Get newer, smarter queens on their thrones who might be willing to bargain."
Rhys shook his head.
"One, it'd take too long. We don't have that time."
I thought of the past few wasted weeks, how hard Azrael had tried to get into those courts.
If even his shadows and spies could not breach their inner workings, then I doubted an assassin would. The confirming shake of the head Azrael gave Cassian said as much.
Two, Rhys continued. Who knows if that would somehow impact the magic of their half of the book? It must be given freely. It's possible the magic is strong enough to see our scheming.
He sucked on his teeth.
We are stuck with them.
We could try again, Moore said. Let me speak to them. Let me go to their palace.
No,
Azrael said. Moore raised her brows, and a faint color stained Azrael's tan face. But his features were set, his hazel eyes solid.
You're not setting foot in that human realm.
I fought in the war, you will do well to remember.
No,
Azrael said again, refusing to break her stare. His shifting wings rasped against the back of his chair.
They would string you up and make an example of you.
They'd have to catch me first.
That palace is a death trap for our kind,
Azrael countered, his voice low and rough.
Built by Fey hands to protect the humans from us. You set foot inside it, Moore, and you won't walk out again. Why do you think we've had such trouble getting a foothold in there?
If going into their territory isn't an option, I cut in before Moore could say whatever the temper limning her features hissed at her to retort and surely wound the Shadow Singer more than she intended. And deceit or any mental manipulation might make the magic wreck the book. What proof can be offered? Rhys lifted his head. Who is this Miriam? Who was she to Jurian? And who was that prince you spoke of? Draken? Perhaps they could be used as proof, if only to vouch for you. The heat died from Moore's eyes as she shifted a foot against the moss and flagstone. But Rhys interlocked his fingers in the space between his knees before he said,
500 years ago, in the years leading up to the war, there was a Fey kingdom in the southern part of the continent. It was a realm of sand surrounding a lush river delta. The Blackland. There was no crueler place to be born a human, for no humans were born free. They were all of them slaves, forced to build great temples and palaces for the High Fey who ruled. There was no escape, no chance of having their freedom purchased. And the Queen of the Blackland.
Memory stirred in his face. She made Amarantha seem as sweet as Elaine, Moore explained with soft venom.
Miriam, Rhys continued, was a half-fey female born of a human mother. And as her mother was a slave, as the conception was, against her mother's will, so too was Miriam born in shackles and deemed human, denied any rights to her fey heritage.
Tell the full story another time. Amryn cut in. The gist of it, girl, she said to me, is that Miriam was given as a wedding gift by the queen to her betrothed, a foreign fey prince named Draken. He was horrified and let Miriam escape. Fearing the queen's wrath, she fled through the desert across the sea into Moor Desert and was found by Jurian. She fell in with his rebel armies, became his lover, and was a healer amongst the warriors. Until a devastating battle found her tending to Jurian's new Fey allies, including Prince Draken. Turns out, Miriam had opened his eyes to the monster he planned to wed. He'd broken the engagement, allied his armies with the humans, and had been looking for the beautiful slave girl for 3 years. Jurian had no idea that his new ally coveted his lover. He was too focused on winning the war, on destroying Amarantha in the north. As his obsession took over, he was blind to witnessing Miriam and Draken falling in love behind his back. It wasn't behind his back, Moore snapped. Miriam ended it with Jurian before she ever laid a finger on Draken.
Amryn shrugged.
Long story short, girl, when Jurian was slaughtered by Amarantha, and during the long centuries after, she told him what had happened to his lover, that she'd betrayed him for a fey male, Everyone believed Miriam and Draken perished while liberating her people from the Black Land at the end of the war, even Amarantha.
And they didn't, I said. Rhys and Moore nodded. It was all a way to escape, wasn't it? To start over somewhere else with both their peoples? Another set of nods.
So why not show the queens that? You started to tell them—
Because, Rhys cut in addition to not proving a thing about my character, which seemed to be their biggest gripe, it would be a grave betrayal of our friends. Their only wish was to remain hidden, to live in peace with their peoples. They fought and bled and suffered enough for it. I will not bring them into this conflict.
Draken's aerial army, Cassian mused, was as good as ours. We might need to call upon him by the end.
Rhys merely shook his head, conversation over. And perhaps he was right. Revealing Draken and Miriam's peaceful existence explained nothing about his own intentions, about his own merits and character. So what do we offer them instead? I asked. What do we show them?
Rhys's face was bleak.
We show them Valaris.
What?
Moore barked, but Amryn shushed her.
You can't mean to bring them here, I said.
Of course not. The risks are too great. Entertaining them for even a night would likely result in bloodshed, Rhys said.
So I plan to merely show them.
They'll dismiss it as mind tricks,
Azriel countered.
No, Rhys said, getting to his feet. I mean to show them, playing by their own rules.
Amryn clicked her nails against each other. What do you mean, High Lord? But Rhys only said to Moore,
Send word to your father. We're going to pay him and my other court a visit.
My blood iced over. The Court of Nightmares. There was an orb, it turned out, that had belonged to Moore's family for millennia, the Veritas. It was rife with the truth magic she'd claimed to possess, that many in her bloodline also bore, and the Veritas was one of their most valued and guarded talismans. Rhys wasted no time planning. We'd go to the Court of Nightmares within the Hewn City tomorrow afternoon, winnowing near the massive mountain it was built within, and then flying the rest of the way. Moore, Cassian, and I were mere distractions to make Rhys's sudden visit less suspicious, while Azriel stole the orb from Moore's father's chambers. The orb was known amongst the humans, had been wielded by them in the war, Rhys told me over a quiet dinner that night. The queens would know it, and would know it was absolute truth, not illusion or trick, when he used it to show them, like peering into a living painting, that this city and its good people existed. The others had suggested other places within his territory to prove he wasn't some warmongering sadist, but none had the same impact as Valaris, Rhys claimed. For his people, for the world, he'd offer the queens this slice of truth. After dinner, I wandered into the streets and found myself eventually standing at the edge of the rainbow, the night in full swing, patrons and artists and everyday citizens bustling from shop to shop, peering in the galleries, buying supplies. Compared to the sparkling lights and bright colors of the little hill sloping down to the river ahead, the streets behind me were shadowed. Sleeping. I'd been here nearly 2 months and hadn't worked up the courage to walk through the artist's quarter. But this place. Rhys would risk this beautiful city, these lovely people, all for a shot at peace. Perhaps the guilt of leaving it protected while the rest of Prithian had suffered drove him. Perhaps offering up Valaris on a silver platter was his own attempt to ease the weight. I rubbed at my chest, an ache building in there. I took a step toward the quarter and halted. Maybe I should have asked Moore to come. but she'd left after dinner, pale-faced and jumpy, ignoring Cassian's attempt to speak with her. Azrael had taken to the clouds to contact his spies. He'd quietly promised the pacing Cassian to find more when he was done. And Rhys? He had enough going on. And he hadn't objected when I stated I was going for a walk. He hadn't even warned me to be careful. If it was about trust or absolute faith in the safety of his city, or just that he knew how badly I'd react if he tried to tell me not to go or warn me, I didn't know. I shook my head, clearing my thoughts as I again stared down the main street at the rainbow. I'd felt flickers these past few weeks in that hole inside my chest. Flickers of images, but nothing solid. Nothing roaring with life and demand. Not in the way that it had that night, seeing him kneel on that bed, naked and tattooed and winged. It'd be stupid to venture into the quarter anyway, when it might very well be ruined in any upcoming conflict. It'd be stupid to fall in love with it when it might be torn from me. So, like a coward, I turned and went home. Rhys was waiting in the foyer, leaning against the post of the stair banister. His face was grim. I halted in the middle of the entry carpet. What's wrong?
I'm debating asking you to stay tomorrow.
His wings were nowhere to be seen, not even the shadow of them. I crossed my arms. I thought I was going. Don't lock me up in this house. Don't shove me aside. He ran a hand through his hair.
What I have to be tomorrow, who I have to become, is not... It's not something I want you to see. How I will treat you, treat others.
The mask of the High Lord, I said quietly.
Yes.
He took a seat on the bottom step of the stairs. I remained in the center of the foyer as I asked carefully, Why don't you want me to see that?
Because you've only started to look at me like I'm not a monster, and I can't stomach the idea of anything you see tomorrow, being beneath that mountain, putting you back into that place where I found you.
Beneath that mountain. Underground, yes? I'd forgotten that. Forgotten I'd see the court that Amarantha had modeled her own after, that I'd be trapped beneath the earth. But with Cassian and Azrael, and more. With him. I waited for the panic, the cold sweat. Neither came. Let me help, in whatever way I can. Bleakness shaded the starlight in those eyes.
The role you will have to play is not a pleasant one.
I trust you. I sat beside him on the stairs, close enough that the heat of his body warmed the chill night air clinging to my overcoat. Why did Moore look so disturbed when she left? His throat bobbed. I could tell it was rage and pain that kept him from telling me outright, not mistrust. After a moment, he said,
I was there, in the Hewn City, the day her father declared she was to be sold in marriage to Eris, eldest son of the High Lord of the Autumn Court.
Lucian's brother.
Eris had a reputation for cruelty, and more... begged me not to let it happen. For all her power, all her wildness, she had no voice, no rights with those people. And my father didn't particularly care if his cousins used their offspring as breeding stock.
What happened? I breathed.
I brought Moore to the Illyrian camp for a few days, and she saw Cassian and decided she'd do the one thing that would ruin her value to these people. I didn't know until after, and... it was a mess. With Cassian, with her, with our families. And it's another long story, but the short of it is that Eris refused to marry her, said she'd been sullied by a bastard-born lesser fairy, and he'd now sooner fuck a sow. Her family, they...
I'd never seen him at such a loss for words. Rhys cleared his throat.
When they were done, they dumped her on the Autumn Court border with a note nailed to her body that said she was Eris's problem. Nailed. Nailed to her.
Rhys said with soft wrath, Eris left her for dead in the middle of their woods. Azrael found her a day later. It was all I could do to keep him from going to either court and slaughtering them all.
I thought of that merry face, the flippant laughter, the female that did not care who approved. Perhaps because she had seen the ugliest her kind had to offer, and had survived. And I understood why Rhys could not endure Nesta for more than a few moments, why he could not let go of that anger where her failings were concerned, even if I had. Baron's fire began crackling in my veins. My fire, not his. Not his son's, either. I took Rhys's hand, and his thumb brushed against the back of my palm. I tried not to think about the ease of that stroke, as I said in a hard, calm voice I barely recognized, Tell me what I need to do tomorrow.
Chapter 42. I was not frightened. Not of the role that Rhys had asked me to play today. Not of the roaring wind as we winnowed into a familiar, snow-capped mountain range refusing to yield to spring's awakening kiss. Not of the punishing drop as Rhys flew us between the peaks and valleys, swift and sleek. Cassian and Azrael flanked us. Mor would meet us at the gates to the mountain base. Rhys's face was drawn, his shoulders tense as I gripped them. I knew what to expect, but even after he'd told me what he needed me to do, even after I had agreed, he'd been aloof, haunted, worried for me, I realized. And just because of that worry, just to get that tightness off his face, even for these few minutes before we faced his unholy realm beneath that mountain, I said over the wind, Amryn and Mor told me that the span of an Illyrian male's wings says a lot about the size of other parts. His eyes shot to mine, then to pine tree-coated slopes below.
Did they now?
I shrugged in his arms, trying not to think about the naked body that night all those weeks ago, though I hadn't glimpsed much.
They also said Azrael's wings are the biggest.
Mischief danced in those violet eyes, washing away the cold distance, the strain. The spymaster was a black blur against the pale blue sky.
When we return home, let's get out the measuring stick, shall we?
I pinched the rock-hard muscle of his forearm. Rhys flashed me a wicked grin before he tilted down. Mountains and snow and trees and sun and utter freefall through wisps of cloud. A breathless scream came out of me as we plummeted. Throwing my arms around his neck was instinct. His low laugh tickled my nape.
You're willing to brave my brand of darkness and put up one of your own. Willing to go to a watery grave and take on the weaver, but a little freefall makes you scream?
I'll leave you to rot the next time you have a nightmare, I hissed, my eyes still shut and body locked as he snapped out his wings to ease us into a steady glide.
No, you won't, he crooned. You liked seeing me naked too much.
Prick. His laugh rumbled against me. Eyes closed, the wind roaring like a wild animal, I adjusted my position, gripping him tighter. My knuckles brushed one of his wings, smooth and cool like silk, but hard as stone with its stretched taut. Fascinating. I blindly reached again, and dared to run a fingertip along some inner edge. Rhysand shuddered, a soft groan slipping past my ear.
That, he said tightly, is very sensitive.
I snatched my finger back, pulling away far enough to see his face. With the wind, I had to squint, and my braided hair ripped this way and that, but he was entirely focused on the mountains around us.
Does it tickle?
He flicked his gaze to me, then to the snow and pine that went on forever.
It feels like this, he said,
and leaned in so close that his lips brushed the shell of my ear as he sent a gentle breath into it. My back arched on instinct, my chin tipping up at the caress of that breath.
Oh,
I managed to say. I felt him smile against my ear and pull away.
If you want an Illyrian male's attention, you'd be better off grabbing him by the balls. We're trained to protect our wings at all costs. Some males attack first, ask questions later if their wings are touched without invitation.
And during sex? The question blurted out. Reese's face was nothing but feline amusement as he monitored the mountains.
During sex, an Illyrian male can find completion just by having someone touch his wings in the right spot.
My blood thrummed. Dangerous territory. More lethal than the drop below.
Have you found that to be true?
His eyes stripped me bare.
I've never allowed anyone to see or touch my wings during sex. It makes you vulnerable in a way that I'm not comfortable with.
Too bad, I said, staring out too casually toward the mighty mountain that now appeared on the horizon, towering over the others, and capped, I noted, with that glimmering palace of moonstone.
Why? He asked warily.
I shrugged, fighting the upward tugging of my lips.
Because I bet you could get into some interesting positions with those wings.
Reese loosed a barking laugh, and his nose grazed my ear. I felt him open his mouth to whisper something, but something dark and fast and sleek shot for us, and he plunged down and away, swearing. But another one and another kept coming. Not just ordinary arrows, I realized as Reese veered, snatching one out of the air. Others bounced harmlessly off a shield he blasted up. He studied the wood in his palm and dropped it with a hiss. Ash arrows. To kill fairies. And now that I was one.
Faster than the wind, faster than death, Reese shot for the ground.
Flew, not winnowed, because he wanted to know where our enemies were, didn't want to lose them. The wind bit my face, screeched in my ears, ripped at my hair with brutal claws. Azrael and Cassian were already hurtling for us. Shields of translucent blue and red encircled them, sending those arrows bouncing off, their siphons at work. The arrows shot from the pine forest coating the mountains, then vanished. Reese slammed into the ground, snow flying in his wake, and fury like I hadn't seen since that day in Amarantha's court twisted his features. I could feel it thrumming against me, roiling through the clearing we now stood in. Azrael and Cassian were there in an instant, their colored shields shrinking back into their siphons. The three of them, forces of nature in the pine forest, Rhysand didn't even look at me as he ordered Cassian,
take her to the palace and stay there until I'm back. Az, you're with me.
Cassian reached for me, but I stepped away. No.
What?
Reese snarled, the word near guttural. Take me with you, I said. I didn't want to go to that moonstone palace to pace and wait and wring my fingers. Cassian and Azrael wisely kept their mouths shut. And Reese, mother bless him, only tucked in his wings and crossed his arms, waiting to hear my reasons. I've seen ash arrows, I said a bit breathlessly. I might recognize where they were made. And if they came from the hand of another High Lord, I can detect that too. If they'd come from Tarquin. And I can track just as well on the ground as any of you. Except for Azrael, maybe. So you and Cassian take the skies, I said, still waiting for the rejection, the order to lock me up. And I'll hunt on the ground with Azrael. The wrath radiating through the snow clearing ebbed into frozen, too calm rage. But Reese said,
Cassian,
I want aerial patrols on the sea borders, stationed in 2-mile rings all the way out toward Highburn. I want foot soldiers in the mountain passes along the southern border. Make sure those warning fires are ready on every peak. We're not going to rely on magic.
He turned to Azrael.
When you're done, warn your spies that they might be compromised and prepare to get them out. And put fresh ones in. We keep this contained. We don't tell anyone inside that court what happened. If anyone mentions it, say it was a training exercise.
Because we couldn't afford to let that weakness show, even amongst his subjects. His eyes at last found mine.
We've got an hour until we're expected at court. Make it count.
We searched, but the missed arrows had been snatched up by our attackers, and even the shadows and wind told Azrael nothing, as if our enemy had been hidden from them as well. But that was twice now that they'd known where Rhys and I would be. Moore found Azrael and me after 20 minutes, wanting to know what the hell had happened. We'd explained, and she'd winnowed away to spin whatever excuse would keep her horrible family from suspecting anything was amiss. But at the end of the hour, we hadn't found a single track, and we could delay our meeting no longer. The Court of Nightmares lay behind a mammoth set of doors carved into the mountain itself. And from the base, the mountain rose so high I couldn't see the palace I had once stayed in atop it. Only snow and rock and birds circling above. There was no one outside, no village, no signs of life. Nothing to indicate a whole city of people dwelled within. But I did not let my curiosity or any lingering trepidation show as Moore and I entered. Rhys, Cassian, and Azrael would arrive minutes later. There were sentries at the stone gates, clothed not in black, as I might have suspected, but in gray and white. Armor meant to blend into the mountain face. Moore didn't so much as look at them as she led me silently inside the mountain city. My body clenched as soon as the darkness, the scent of rock and fire and roasting meat hit me. I had been here before, suffered here. Not under the mountain. This was not under the mountain. Indeed, Amarantha's court had been the work of a child. The Court of Nightmares was the work of a god. While under the mountain had been a series of halls and rooms and levels, this was truly a city. The walkway that Moore led us down was an avenue, and around us, rising high into gloom, were buildings and spires, homes and bridges. A metropolis carved from the dark stone of the mountain itself, no inch of it left unmarked or without some lovely, hideous artwork etched into it. Figures danced and fornicated, begged and reveled. Pillars were carved to look like curling vines of night-blooming flowers. Water ran throughout in little streams and rivers tapped from the heart of the mountain itself. The Hewn City. A place of such terrible beauty that it was an effort to keep the wonder and dread off my face. Music was already playing somewhere, and our hosts still did not come out to greet us. The people we passed, only High Fae, were clothed in finery, their faces deathly pale and cold. Not one stopped us. Not one smiled or bowed. Moore ignored them all. Neither of us had said one word. Rhys had told me not to, that the walls had ears here. Moore led me down the avenue toward another set of stone gates, thrown open at the base of what looked to be a castle within the mountain, the official seat of the High Lord of the Night Court. Great, scaled black beasts were carved into those gates, all coiled together in a nest of claws and fangs, sleeping and fighting, some locked in an endless cycle of devouring each other. Between them flowed vines of jasmine and moonflowers. I could have sworn the beasts seemed to writhe in the silvery glow of the bobbing fae lights throughout the mountain city. The gates of eternity,
That's what I'd call the painting that flickered in my mind. More continued through them, a flash of color and life in this strange, cold place. She wore deepest red, the gossamer and gauze of her sleeveless gown clinging to her breasts and hips, while carefully placed shafts left much of her stomach and back exposed. Her hair was down in rippling waves, and cuffs of solid gold glinted around her wrists. A queen. A queen who bowed to no one. A queen who had faced them all down and triumphed. A queen who owned her body, her life, her destiny, and never apologized for it. My clothes, which she had taken a moment in the pine wood to shift me into, were of a similar ilk, nearly identical to those I had been forced to wear under the mountain. Two shafts of fabric that hardly covered my breasts flowed to below my navel, where a belt across my hips joined them in one long shaft that draped between my legs and barely covered my backside. But unlike the chiffon and bright colors I had worn then, this one was fashioned of black, glittering fabric that sparkled with every swish of my hips. Moore had fashioned my hair into a crown atop my head, right behind the black diadem that had been set before it, accented with flecks of diamond that made it glisten like the night sky. She'd darkened and lengthened my eyelashes, sweeping out an elegant, vicious line of kohl at the outer corner of each. My lips she'd painted blood red. Into the castle beneath the mountain we strode. There were more people here, milling about the endless halls, watching our every breath. Some looked like Moore, with their gold hair and beautiful faces. They even hissed at her. Moore smirked at them. Part of me wished she'd rip their throats out instead. We at last came to a throne room of polished ebony. More of the serpents from the front gates were carved here, this time wrapped around the countless columns supporting the onyx ceiling. It was so high up that gloom hid its finer details, but I knew more had been carved there, too. Great beasts to monitor the manipulations and scheming within this room. The throne itself had been fashioned out of a few of them, a head snaking around either side of the back, as if they watched over the High Lord's shoulder. A crowd had gathered, and for a moment I was again in Amarantha's throne room, so similar was the atmosphere, the malice, so similar was the dais at the other end. A golden-haired, beautiful man stepped into our path toward that ebony throne, and more smoothly halted. I knew he was her father without him saying a word. He was clothed in black, a silver circlet atop his head. His brown eyes were like old soil as he said to her, "Where is he?" No greeting, no formality. He ignored me wholly. Moore shrugged.
"He arrives when he wishes to,"
she continued on. Her father looked at me then, and I willed my face into a mask like hers, disinterested, aloof. Her father surveyed my face, my body, and where I thought he'd sneer and ogle, there was nothing. No emotion, just heartless cold. I followed more before disgust wrecked my own icy mask. Banquet tables against the black walls were covered with fat, succulent fruits and wreaths of golden bread, interrupted with roast meats, kegs of cider and ale, and pies and tarts and little cakes of every size and variety. It might have made my mouth water, were it not for the high fae and their finery, were it not for the fact that no one touched the food, the power and wealth lying in letting it go to waste. Moore went right up to the obsidian dais, and I halted at the foot of the steps as she took up a place beside the throne and said to the crowd in a voice that was clear and cruel and cunning, "Your High Lord approaches. He's in a foul mood, so I suggest being on your best behavior, unless you wish to be the evening entertainment." A and before the crowd could begin murmuring, I felt it. Felt him. The very rock beneath my feet seemed to tremble, a pulsing, steady beat. His footsteps, as if the mountain shuddered at each touch. Everyone in that room went still as death, as if petrified that their very breathing would draw the attention of the predator now strolling toward us. Moore's shoulders were back, her chin high, feral, wanton pride at her master's arrival. Remembering my role, I kept my own chin lowered, watching beneath my brows. First, Cassian and Azrael appeared in the doorway. The High Lord's General and Shadow Singer, and the most powerful Illyrians in history. They were not the males I had come to know. Clad in battle black that hugged their muscled forms, their armor was intricate, scaled, their shoulders impossibly broader, their faces a portrait of unfeeling brutality. They reminded me, somehow, of the ebony beasts carved into the pillars they passed. More siphons, I realized, glimmered in addition to the ones atop each of their hands. A siphon in the center of their chest, one on either shoulder, one on either knee. For a moment, my knees quaked, and I understood what the camp lords had feared in them. If one siphon was what most Illyrians needed to handle their killing power, Cassian and Azrael had seven each. Seven. The courtiers had the good sense to back away a step as Cassian and Azrael strolled through the crowd toward the dais. Their wings gleamed, their talons at the apex sharp enough to pierce air, like they'd honed them. Cassian's focus had gone right to Moore, Azrael indulging in all of a glance before scanning the people around them. Most shirked from the spymaster's eyes, though they trembled as they beheld Truth-Teller at his side, the Illyrian blade peeking above his left shoulder. Azrael, his face a mask of beautiful death, silently promised them all endless, unyielding torment, even the shadows shuddering in his wake. I knew why, knew for whom he'd gladly do it. They had tried to sell a 17-year-old girl into marriage with a sadist, and then brutalized her in ways I couldn't, wouldn't let myself consider. And these people now lived in utter terror of the three companions who stood at the dais. Good. They should be afraid of them. Afraid of me. And then Rhysand appeared. He had released the damper on his power, on who he was. His power filled the throne room, the castle, the mountain, the world. It had no end and no beginning. No wings, no weapons, no sign of the warrior. Nothing but the elegant, cruel High Lord the world believed him to be. His hands were in his pockets, his black tunic seeming to gobble up the light. And on his head sat a crown of stars. No sign of the male who had been drinking on the roof. No sign of the fallen prince kneeling on his bed. The full impact of him threatened to sweep me away. Here he was the most powerful High Lord ever born. The face of dreams and nightmares. Rhys's eyes met mine briefly from across the room as he strolled between the pillars, to the throne that was his by blood and sacrifice and might. My own blood sang at the power that thrummed from him, at the sheer beauty of him. Moore stepped off the dais, dropping to one knee in a smooth bow. Cassian and Azrael followed suit. So did everyone in that room, including me. The ebony floor was so polished I could see my red-painted lips in it, see my own expressionless face. The room was so silent I could hear each of Rhys's footsteps toward us.
"Well, well," he said to no one in particular. "Looks like you're all on time for once."
Raising his head as he continued kneeling, Cassian gave Rhys a half-grin.
the High Lord's commander incarnate, eager to do his bloodletting. Rhys's boots stopped in my line of sight. His fingers were icy on my chin as he lifted my face. The entire room, still on the floor, watched. But this was the role he needed me to play. To be a distraction and novelty. Rhys's lips curved upward.
Welcome to my home, Feyre Cursebreaker.
I lowered my eyes, my coal-thick lashes tickling my cheek. He clicked his tongue, his grip on my chin tightening. Everyone noticed the push of his fingers, the predatory angle of his head as he said,
Come with me.
A tug on my chin, and I rose to my feet. Rhys dragged his eyes over me, and I wondered if it wasn't entirely for show as they glazed a bit. He led me the few steps onto the dais, to the throne. He sat, smiling faintly at his monstrous court. He owned every inch of the throne, these people. And with a tug on my waist, he perched me on his lap. The High Lord's whore. Who I'd become under the mountain. Who the world expected me to be. The dangerous new pet that Moore's father would now seek to feel out. Rhys's hand slid along my bare waist, the other running down my exposed thigh. Cold. His hands were so cold I almost yelped. He must have felt the silent flinch. A heartbeat later, his hands had warmed. His thumb, curving around the inside of my thigh, gave a slow, long stroke as if to say, Sorry. Rhys indeed leaned in to bring his mouth near my ear, well aware his subjects had not yet risen from the floor. As if they had once done so before they were bidden, long ago, and had learned the consequences. Rhysand whispered to me, his other hand now stroking the bare skin of my ribs in lazy, indolent circles.
Try not to let it go to your head.
I knew they could all hear it. So did he. I stared at their bowed heads, my heart hammering, but said with midnight smoothness, What? Rhys's breath caressed my ear, the twin to the breath he'd brushed against it merely an hour ago in the skies.
That every male in here is contemplating what they'd be willing to give up in order to get that pretty red mouth of yours on them.
I waited for the blush, the shyness to creep in. But I was beautiful. I was strong. I had survived, triumphed, as Moore had survived in this horrible, poisoned house. So I smiled a bit, the first smile of my new mask. Let them see that pretty red mouth and my white, straight teeth. His hand slid higher up my thigh. The proprietary touch of a male who knew he owned someone, body and soul. He'd apologized in advance for it, for this game, these roles we'd have to play. But I leaned into that touch, leaned back into his hard, warm body. I was pressed so closely against him that I could feel the deep rumble of his voice as he at last said to his court,
Rise.
As one, they did. I smirked at some of them, gloriously bored and infinitely amused. Rhys brushed a knuckle along the inside of my knee, and every nerve in my body narrowed to that touch.
Go play, he said to them all.
They obeyed, the crowd dispersing, music striking up from a distant corner.
Kier,
Rhys said, his voice cutting through the room like lightning on a stormy night. It was all he needed to summon Moore's father to the foot of the dais. Kier bowed again, his face lined with icy resentment as he took in Rhys, then me, glancing once at Moore and the Illyrians. Cassian gave Kier a slow nod that told him he remembered and would never forget what the steward of the Hewn City had done to his own daughter. But it was from Azriel that Kier cringed.
from the sight of Truth Teller. One day, I realized, Asriel would use that blade on Moore's father, and take a long, long while to carve him up.
"Report," Rhys said, stroking a knuckle down my ribs.
He gave a dismissive nod to Cassian, Moore, and Asriel, and the trio faded away into the crowd. Within a heartbeat, Asriel had vanished into shadows and was gone. Kier didn't even turn.
Before Rhys, Kier was nothing more than a sullen child, yet I knew Moore's father was older, far older. The steward clung to power, it seemed. Rhys was power.
"Greetings, my lord," Kier said,
his deep voice polished smooth.
"And greetings to your guest."
Rhys's hand flattened on my thigh as he angled his head to look at me.
"She is lovely, isn't she?"
"Indeed," Kier said, lowering his eyes.
"There is little to report, my lord. All has been quiet since your last visit."
"No one for me to punish?"
A cat playing with his food.
"Unless you'd like for me to select someone here, no, my lord."
Rhys clicked his tongue.
"Pity."
He again surveyed me, then leaned to tug my earlobe with his teeth. And damn me to hell, but I leaned farther back as his teeth pressed down, at the same moment his thumb drifted high on the side of my thigh, sweeping across sensitive skin in a long, luxurious touch. My body went loose and tight, and my breathing? Cauldron, damn me again, the scent of him, the citrus in the sea, the power roiling off him. My breathing hitched a bit. I knew he noticed, knew he felt that shift in me. His fingers stilled on my leg. Kier began mentioning people I didn't know in the court. Bland reports on marriages and alliances, blood feuds, and Rhys let him talk. His thumb stroked again, this time joined with his pointer finger. A dull roaring was filling my ears, drowning out everything but that touch on the inside of my leg. The music was throbbing, ancient, wild, and people ground against each other to it. His eyes on the steward, Rhys made vague nods every now and then, while his fingers continued their slow, steady stroking on my thighs, rising higher with every pass. People were watching. Even as they drank and ate, even as some of them danced in small circles, people were watching. I was sitting in his lap, his own personal plaything, his every touch visible to them, and yet it might as well have been only the two of us. Kier listed the expenses and costs of running the court, and Rhys gave another vague nod. This time, his nose brushed the spot between my neck and shoulder, followed by a passing graze of his mouth. My breasts tightened, becoming full and heavy, aching. Aching like what was now pooling in my core. Heat filled my face, my blood. But Kier said at last, as if his own self-control slipped the leash,
"I had heard the rumors and I didn't quite believe them."
His gaze settled on me, on my breasts, peeked through the folds of my dress, of my legs,
spread wider than they'd been minutes before, and Rhys's hand in dangerous territory.
"But it seems true. Tamlin's pet is now owned by another master."
"You should see how I make her beg," Rhys murmured, nudging my neck with his nose.
Kier clasped his hands behind his back.
"I assume you brought her to make a statement." "You know everything I do is a statement."
"Of course. This one, it seems, you enjoy putting in cobwebs and crowns."
Rhys's hand paused, and I sat straighter at the tone, the disgust. And I said to Kier in a voice that belonged to another woman, "Perhaps I'll put a leash on you."
Reese's approval tapped against my mental shield, the hand at my ribs now making lazy circles.
"She does enjoy playing," he mused onto my shoulder. He jerked his chin toward the steward. "Get her some wine."
Pure command, no politeness. Keir stiffened, but strode off. Reese didn't dare break from his mask, but the light kiss he pressed beneath my ear told me enough. Apology and gratitude, and more apologies. He didn't like this any more than I did. And yet, to get what we needed, to buy Azrael time, he'd do it, and so would I. I wondered, then, with his hands beneath my breasts and between my legs, what Reese wouldn't give of himself. Wondered if perhaps the arrogance and swagger, if they masked a male who perhaps thought he wasn't worth very much at all. A new song began, like dripping honey, and edged into a swift-moving wind punctuated with driving relentless drums. I twisted, studying his face. There was nothing warm in his eyes, nothing of the friend I'd made. I opened my shield enough to let him in.
"What?"
His voice floated into my mind.
I reached down the bond between us, caressing that wall of ebony adamant. A small sliver cracked, just for me. And I said into it, "You are good, Reese. You are kind. This mask does not scare me. I see you beneath it." His hands tightened on me, and his eyes held mine as he leaned forward to brush his mouth against my cheek. It was answer enough, and an unleashing. I leaned a bit more against him, my legs widening ever so slightly. "Why'd you stop?" I said into his mind, into him. A near-silent growl reverberated against me. He stroked my ribs again, in time to the beat of the music, his thumb rising nearly high enough to graze the underside of my breasts. I let my head drop back against his shoulder. I let go of the part of me that heard their words, "whore, whore, whore." Let go of the part that said those words alongside them, "traitor, liar, whore." And I just became. I became the music and the drums and the wild dark thing in the High Lord's arms. His eyes were wholly glazed, and not with power or rage. Something red hot and edged with glittering darkness exploded in my mind. I dragged a hand down his thigh, feeling the hidden warrior's strength there. Dragged it back up again in a long, idle stroke, needing to touch him, feel him. I was going to catch fire and burn. I was going to start burning right here.
"Easy," he said with wicked amusement through that open sliver in my shield. "If you become a living candle, poor Keir will throw a hissy fit. And then you'd ruin the party for everyone."
Because the fire would let them all know I wasn't normal. And no doubt Keir would inform his almost allies in the Autumn Court. Or one of these other monsters would. Reese shifted his hips, rubbing against me with enough pressure that for a second I didn't care about Keir or the Autumn Court or what Azrael might be doing right now to steal the orb. I had been so cold, so lonely for so long, and my body cried out at the contact, at the joy of being touched and held and alive. The hand that had been on my waist slid across my abdomen, hooking into the low-slung belt there. I rested my head between his shoulder and neck, staring at the crowd as they stared at me, savoring every place where Reese and I connected and wanting more, more, more. At last, when my blood had begun to boil, when Reese skimmed the underside of my breast with his knuckle, I looked to where I knew Keir was standing, watching us, my wine forgotten in his hand.
We both did.
The steward was staring unabashedly as he leaned against the wall, unsure whether to interrupt, half terrified to. We were his distraction. We were the sleight of hand while Az stole the orb. I knew Rhys was still holding Kier's gaze as the tip of his tongue slid up my neck. I arched my back, eyes heavy-lidded, breathing uneven. I'd burn and burn and burn. I think he's so disgusted that he might have given me the orb just to get out of here, Rhys said in my mind, that other hand drifting dangerously south. But there was such a growing ache there, and I wore nothing beneath that would conceal the damning evidence if he slid his hand a fraction higher. You and I put on a good show, I said back. The person who said that, husky and sultry, I'd never heard that voice come out of me before, even in my mind. His hand slid to my upper thigh, fingers curving in. I ground against him, trying to shift those hands away from what he'd learn, to find him hard against my backside. Every thought eddied from my head. Only a thrill of power remained as I writhed along that impressive length. Rhys let out a low, rough laugh. Kier just watched and watched and watched, rigid, horrified, stuck here, until Rhys released him, and not thinking twice about why or where the spymaster had gone. So I turned around again, meeting Rhysand's now blazing eyes, and then licked up the column of his throat. Wind and sea, and citrus and sweat. It almost undid me. I faced forward, and Rhys dragged his mouth along the back of my neck, right over my spine, just as I shifted against the hardness pushing into me, insistent and dominating, precisely as his hand slid a bit too high on my inner thigh. I felt the predatory focus go right to the slickness he'd felt there, proof of my traitorous body. His arms tightened around me, and my face burned, perhaps a bit from shame, but Rhys sensed my focus, my fire slip. It's fine, he said, but that mental voice sounded breathless. It means nothing, it's just your body reacting. Because you're so irresistible? My attempt to deflect sounded strained, even in my mind. But he laughed, probably for my benefit. We danced around and teased and taunted each other for months. And maybe it was my body's reaction. Maybe it was his body's reaction. But the taste of him threatened to destroy me, consume me, and another male. I'd had another male's hands all over me when Tamlin and I were barely fighting my nausea. I pasted a sleepy, lust-fogged smile on my face. Right as Azrael returned and gave Rhys a subtle nod, he'd gotten the orb. Moore slid up to the spymaster, running a proprietary hand over his shoulders, his chest, as she circled to look into his face. Az's scar-mottled hand wrapped around her bare waist, squeezing once, the confirmation she also needed. She offered him a little grin that would no doubt spread rumors, and sauntered into the crowd again. Dazzling, distracting, leaving them thinking Az had been here the whole time, leaving them pondering if she'd extend Azrael an invitation to her bed. Azrael just stared after Moore, distant and bored. I wondered if he was as much of a mess inside as I was. Rhys crooked a finger to Kier, who, scowling a bit in his daughter's direction, stumbled forward with my wine. He'd barely reached the dais before Rhys's power took it from him, floating the goblet to us. Rhys set it on the ground beside the throne, a stupid task he'd thought up for the steward to remind him of his powerlessness, and that this throne was not his.
Should I test it for poison?
Rhys drawled, even as he said into my mind, Cassian's waiting. Go. Rhys had the same sex-addled expression on his perfect face, but his eyes? I couldn't read the shadows in his eyes. Maybe for all our teasing, after Amarantha, he didn't want to be touched by a woman like that. Didn't even enjoy being wanted like that. I had been tortured and tormented, but his horrors had gone to another level.
No, my lord, Kier groveled. I would never dare harm you.
Another distraction, this conversation. I took that as my cue to stride to Cassian, who was snarling by a pillar at anyone who came too close. I felt the eyes of the court slide to me, felt them all sniff delicately at what was so clearly written over my body. But as I passed Kier, even with the High Lord at my back, he hissed almost too quietly to hear, You'll get what's coming to you, whore. Night exploded into the room. People cried out. And when the darkness cleared, Kier was on his knees. Rhys still lounged on the throne, his face a mask of frozen rage. The music stopped. Moor appeared on the edge of the crowd, her own features set in smug satisfaction. Even as Azriel approached her side, standing too close to be casual.
Apologize, Rhys said.
My heart thundered at the pure command, the utter wrath. Kier's neck muscles strained, and sweat broke out on his lip.
I said,
Rhys intoned with such horrible calm, apologize. The steward groaned, and when another heartbeat passed, bone cracked. Kier screamed. And I watched as his arm fractured into not two, not three, but four different pieces, skin going taut and loose in all the wrong spots. Another crack. His elbow disintegrated, my stomach churned. Kier began sobbing, the tears half from rage, judging by the hatred in his eyes as he looked at me, then Rhys. But his lips formed the words, I'm sorry. The bones of his other arm splintered, and it was an effort not to cringe. Rhys smiled as Kier screamed again and said to the room, Should I kill him for it? No one answered. Rhys chuckled. He said to his steward,
When you wake up, you're not to see a healer. If I hear that you do...
Another crack. Kier's pinky finger went saggy. The male shrieked. The heat that had boiled my blood turned to ice.
If I hear that you do, I'll carve you into pieces and bury them where no one can stand a chance of putting you together again.
Kier's eyes widened in true terror now. Then, as if an invisible hand had struck the consciousness from him, he collapsed to the floor. Rhys said to no one in particular,
Dump him in his room.
Two males, who looked like they could be Moore's cousins or brothers, rushed forward, gathering up the steward. Moore watched them, sneering faintly, though her skin was pale. He'd wake up. That's what Rhys had said. I made myself keep walking as Rhys summoned another courtier to give him reports on whatever trivial matters. But my attention remained on the throne behind me, even as I slipped beside Cassian, daring the court to approach, to play with me. None did. And for the long hour afterward, my focus half remained on the High Lord whose hands and mouth and body had suddenly made me feel awake, burning. It didn't make me forget, didn't make me obliterate hurts or grievances, it just made me alive. Made me feel as if I'd been asleep for a year,
slumbering inside a glass coffin, and he had just shattered through it and shaken me to consciousness. The High Lord, whose power had not scared me, whose wrath did not wreck me. And now I didn't know where that put me.
Knee-deep in trouble seemed like a good place to start.
Chapter 43. The wind roared around Rhys and me as he winnowed from the skies above his court. But Valaris didn't greet us. Rather, we were standing by a moonlit mountain lake ringed in pine trees, high above the world. We'd left the court as we'd come in, with swagger and menace. Where Cassian, Azriel, and Moore had gone with the orb, I had no idea. Alone at the edge of the lake, Rhys said hoarsely,
"I'm sorry."
I blinked.
"What do you possibly have to be sorry for?"
His hands were shaking, as if in the aftermath of that fury at what Kier had called me, what he'd threatened. Perhaps he'd brought us here before heading home in order to have some privacy before his friends could interrupt.
"I shouldn't have let you go. Let you see that part of us, of me."
I'd never seen him so raw, so stumbling.
"I'm fine."
I didn't know what to make of what had been done, both between us and to Kier. But it had been my choice to play that role, to wear those clothes, to let him touch me. But I said slowly, "We knew what tonight would require of us. Please, please don't start protecting me. Not like that." He knew what I meant. He'd protected me under the mountain, but that primal male rage he'd just shown Kier, a shattered study splattered in paint flashed through my memory. Rhys rasped,
"I will never, never lock you up, force you to stay behind. But when he threatened you tonight, when he called you..." Whore. That's what they'd called him. For 50 years they'd hissed it.
I'd listened to Lucian spit the word in his face. Rhys released a jagged breath.
"It's hard to shut down my instincts."
Instincts. Just like someone else had instincts to protect, to hide away.
"Then you should have prepared yourself better," I snapped. "You seemed to be going along just fine with it until Kier said..."
"I will kill anyone who harms you," Rhys snarled. "I will kill them. And take a damn long time doing it."
He panted.
"Go ahead, hate me. Despise me for it."
"You are my friend," I said, and my voice broke on the word. I hated the tears that slipped down my face. I didn't even know why I was crying. Perhaps for the fact that it had felt real on that throne with him, even for a moment, and it likely hadn't been. Not for him.
"You're my friend, and I understand that you're a High Lord. I understand that you will defend your true court and punish threats against it. But I don't want you to stop telling me things, inviting me to do things because of the threats against me."
Darkness rippled, and wings tore from his back.
"I am not him," Rhys breathed. "I will never be him, act like him. He locked you up and let you wither and die."
He tried.
"Stop comparing. Stop comparing me to him."
The words cut me short. I blinked.
"You think I don't know how stories get written? How this story will be written?"
Rhys put his hands on his chest, his face more open, more anguished than I'd seen it.
"I am the Dark Lord who stole away the Bride of Spring. I am a demon and a nightmare, and I will meet a bad end. He is the Golden Prince, a hero who will get to keep you as his reward for not dying of stupidity and arrogance."
"The things I love have a tendency to be taken from me." He'd admitted that to me under the mountain. But his words were kindling to my temper, to whatever pit of fear was yawning open inside of me.
"And what about my story?" I hissed. "What about my reward? What about what I want?"
What is it that you want, Feyre?
I had no answer. I didn't know. Not anymore.
What is it that you want, Feyre?
I stayed silent. His laugh was bitter, soft.
I thought so.
Perhaps you should take some time to figure that out one of these days.
Perhaps I don't know what I want, but at least I don't hide when I'm behind a mask, I seethed. At least I let them see who I am, broken bits and all. Yes, it's to save your people, but what about the other masks, Rhys? What about letting your friends see your real face? But maybe it's easier not to. Because what if you did let someone in? And what if they saw everything and still walked away? Who could blame them? Who would want to bother with that sort of mess? He flinched. The most powerful High Lord in history flinched. And I knew I'd hit hard and deep. Too hard. Too deep. Rhys, I said.
Let's go home.
The word hung between us, and I wondered if he'd take it back, even as I waited for my own mouth to bark that it wasn't home. But the thought of the clear, crisp blue skies of Valaris at sunset, the sparkle of the city lights. Before I could say yes, he grabbed my hand, not meeting my stare, and winnowed us away. The wind was hollow as it roared around us, the darkness cold and foreign. Cassian, Azriel, and Mor were indeed waiting at the townhouse. I bid them good night while they ambushed Rhysand for answers about what Kier had said to provoke him. I was still in my dress, which felt vulgar in the light of Valaris, but found myself heading into the garden, as if the moonlight and chill might cleanse my mind. Though, if I was being honest, I was waiting for him. What I'd said. I had been awful. He'd told me those secrets, those vulnerabilities in confidence, and I'd thrown them in his face. Because I knew it had hurt him, and I knew I hadn't been talking about him, not really. Minutes passed, the night still cold enough to remind me that spring had not fully dawned, and I shivered, rubbing my arms as the moon drifted. I listened to the fountain and the city music. He didn't come. I wasn't sure what I'd even tell him. I knew he and Tamlin were different. Knew that Rhysand's protective anger tonight had been justified, that I would have had a similar reaction. I'd been bloodthirsty at the barest details of Moore's suffering, had wanted to punish them for it. I had known the risks. I had known I'd be sitting in his lap, touching him, using him. I'd been using him for a while now. And maybe I should tell him I didn't want or expect anything from him. Maybe Rhysand needed to flirt with me, taunt me, as much for a distraction and sense of normalcy as I did. And maybe I'd said what I had to him because I'd realized that I might very well be the person who wouldn't let anyone in. And tonight, when he'd recoiled after he'd seen how he affected me, it had crumpled something in my chest. I had been jealous of Cressida. I had been so profoundly unhappy on that barge because I'd wanted to be the one he smiled at like that. And I knew it was wrong, but I did not think Rhys would call me a whore if I wanted it. Wanted him. No matter how soon it was after Tamlin. Neither would his friends. Not when they had been called the same and worse. And learned to live and love beyond it. Despite it. So maybe it was time to tell Rhys that. To explain that I didn't want to pretend. I didn't want to write it off as a joke or a plan or a distraction. And it'd be hard, and I was scared and might be difficult to deal with, but I was willing to try with him. To try to be something together. Whether it was purely sex or more or something between or beyond them, I didn't know. We'd find out. I was healed,
or healing, enough to want to try. If he was willing to try too. If he didn't walk away when I voiced what I wanted. Him. Not the High Lord. Not the most powerful male in Prithian's history. Just him. The person who had sent music into that cell. Who had picked up that knife in Amarantha's throne room to fight for me when no one else dared. Who had kept fighting for me every day since, refusing to let me crumble and disappear into nothing. So I waited for him in the chilled, moonlit garden. But he didn't come. Rhys wasn't at breakfast. Or lunch. He wasn't in the townhouse at all. I'd even written him a note on the last piece of paper we'd used. I want to talk to you. I'd waited 30 minutes for the paper to vanish. But it stayed in my palm until I threw it in the fire. I was pissed enough that I stalked into the streets, barely remarking that the day was balmy, sunny, that the very air now seemed laced with citrus and wildflowers and new grass. Now that we had the orb, he'd no doubt be in touch with the queens. Who would no doubt waste our time just to remind us they were important, that they too had power. Part of me wished Rhys would crush their bones the way he'd done with Kier's the night before. I headed for Amarin's apartment across the river, needing the walk to clear my head. Winter had indeed yielded to spring. By the time I was halfway there, my overcoat was slung over my arm, and my body was slick with sweat beneath my heavy cream sweater. I found Amarin the same way I'd seen her the last time, hunched over the book, papers strewn around her. I set the blood on the counter. She said, without looking up, "Ah, the reason why Rhys bit my head off this morning." I leaned against the counter, frowning. "Where has he gone off to?" "To hunt whoever attacked you yesterday." If they had ash arrows in their arsenal, I tried to soothe the worry that bit deep. "Do you think it was the summer court?" The blood ruby still sat on the floor, still used as a paperweight against the river breeze blowing in from the open windows. Tharian's necklace was now beside her bed, as if she fell asleep looking at it. "Maybe," Amarin said, dragging a finger along a line of text. She must be truly absorbed to not even bother with the blood. I debated leaving her to it. But she went on. "Regardless, it seems that our enemies have a track on Rhys's magic, which means they're able to find him when he winnows anywhere or if he uses his powers." She at last looked up. "You lot are leaving Valaris in 2 days. Rhys wants you stations at one of the Illyrian war camps, where you'll fly down to the human lands once the queens send word."
"Why not today?"
Amarin said, "Because Starfall is tomorrow night. The first we've had together in 50 years, Rhys is expected to be here amongst his people."
"What's Starfall?"
Amarin's eyes twinkled. "Outside of these borders, the rest of the world celebrates tomorrow as Ninsar, the day of seeds and flowers." I almost flinched at that. I hadn't realized just how much time had passed since I'd come here. "But Starfall," Amarin said, "only at the Night Court can you witness it. Only within this territory is Starfall celebrated in lieu of the Ninsar revelry. The rest and the why of it you'll find out. It's better left as a surprise." Well, that explained why people had seemed to already be preparing for a celebration of sorts. High fae and fairies hustling home with arms full of vibrant wildflower bouquets and streamers and food. The streets were being swept and washed, storefronts patched up with quick, skilled hands. I asked, "Will we come back here once we leave?" She returned to the book. "Not for a while." Something in my chest started sinking. To an immortal, a while must be
a long, long time.
I took that as an invitation to leave and headed for the door in the back of the loft. But Amarin said,
"When Rhys came back, after Amarantha, he was a ghost. He pretended he wasn't, but he was. You made him come alive again."
Words stalled, and I didn't want to think about it. Not when whatever good I'd done, whatever good we'd done for each other, might have been wiped away by what I'd said to him. So I said, "He is lucky to have all of you."
"No," she said softly, more gently than I'd ever heard. "We are lucky to have him, Feyre."
I turned from the door.
"I have known many High Lords," Amarin continued, studying her paper. "Cruel ones, cunning ones, weak ones, powerful ones, but never one that dreamed, not as he does."
"Dreams of what?" I breathed.
"Of peace, of freedom, of a world united, a world thriving, of something better, for all of us."
"He thinks he'll be remembered as the villain in the story."
She snorted.
"But I forgot to tell him," I said quietly, opening the door, "that the villain is usually the person who locks up the maiden and throws away the key."
"Oh?"
I shrugged. "He was the one who let me out."
"If you've moved elsewhere," I wrote after getting home from Amarin's apartment, "you could have at least given me the keys to this house. I keep leaving the door unlocked when I go out. It's getting to be too tempting for the neighborhood burglars."
No response. The letter didn't even vanish. I tried after breakfast the next day, the morning of Starfall.
"Cassian says you're sulking in the House of Wind. What un-High Lord-like behavior? What of my training?"
Again, no reply. My guilt and whatever else it was started to shift. I could barely keep from shredding the paper as I wrote my third one after lunch.
"Is this punishment? Or do people in your inner circle not get second chances if they piss you off? You're a hateful coward."
I was climbing out of the bath, the city abuzz with preparations for the festivities at sundown, when I looked at the desk where I'd left the letter and watched it vanish. Nuala and Caradwyn arrived to help me dress, and I tried not to stare at the desk as I waited, waited and waited for the response. It didn't come.
Chapter 44. But despite the letter, despite the mess between us, as I gaped at the mirror an hour later, I couldn't quite believe what stared back. I had been so relieved these past few weeks to be sleeping at all that I'd forgotten to be grateful that I was keeping down my food. The fullness had come back to my face, my body. What should have taken weeks longer as a human had been hurried along by the miracle of my immortal blood. And the dress? I'd never worn anything like it, and doubted I'd ever wear anything like it again. Crafted of tiny blue gems, so pale they were almost white, it clung to every curve and hollow before draping to the floor and pooling like liquid starlight. The long sleeves were tight, capped at the wrists with cuffs of pure diamond. The neckline grazed my collarbones, the modesty of it undone by how the gown hugged areas I supposed a female might enjoy showing off. My hair had been swept off my face with two combs of silver and diamond, then left to drape down my back. And I thought, as I stood alone in my bedroom, that I might have looked like a fallen star. Rhysand was nowhere to be found when I worked up the courage to go to the rooftop garden. The beading on the dress clinked and hissed against the floors as I walked through the nearly dark house. All of the lights softened or extinguished. In fact, the whole city had blown out its lights. A winged, muscled figure stood atop the roof, and my heart stumbled. But then he turned, just as the scent hit me, and something in my chest sank a bit as Cassian let out a low whistle.
I should have let Nuala and Caradwyn dress me.
I didn't know whether to smile or wince.
You look rather good despite it. He did. He was out of his fighting clothes and armor, sporting a black tunic cut to show off that warrior's body. His black hair had been brushed and smoothed, and even his wings looked cleaner. Cassian held his arms out. His siphons remained, a metal fingerless gauntlet that stretched beneath the tailored sleeves of his jacket.
Ready?
He'd kept me company these past 2 days, training me each morning. While he'd shown me more particulars on how to use an Illyrian blade, mostly how to disembowel someone with it, we'd chatted about everything. Our equally miserable lives as children. Hunting, food, everything, that is, except for the subject of Rhysand. Cassian had mentioned only once that Rhys was up at the house, and I supposed my expression had told him enough about not wanting to hear anything else. He grinned at me now.
With all those gems and beads, you might be too heavy to carry. I hope you've been practicing your winnowing in case I drop you.
Funny. I allowed him to scoop me into his arms before we shot into the sky. Winnowing might still evade me, but I wished I had wings, I realized. Great, powerful wings, so I might fly as they did. So I might see the world and all it had to offer. Below us, every lingering light winked out. There was no moon. No music flitted through the streets. Silence, as if waiting for something. Cassian soared through the quiet dark to where the House of Wind loomed. I could make out crowds gathered on the many balconies and patios only from the faint gleam of starlight on their hair, then the clink of their glasses and low chatter as we neared. Cassian set me down on the crowded patio off the dining room, only a few revelers bothering to look at us. Dim bowls of phalight inside the house illuminated spreads of food and endless rows of green bottles of sparkling wine atop the tables. Cassian was gone and returned before I missed him, pressing a glass of the latter into my hand. No sign of Rhysand. Maybe he'd avoid me the entire party. Someone called Cassian's name from down the patio, and he clapped me on the shoulder before striding off. A tall male, his face in shadow, clasped forearms with Cassian, his white teeth gleaming in the darkness. Azrael stood with the stranger already, his wings tucked in tight to keep revelers from knocking into them. He, Cassian, and Moore had all been quiet today, understandably so. I scanned for signs of my other friends. The words sounded in my head. Was that what they were? Amryn was nowhere in sight, but I spotted a golden head at the same moment she spied me and Moore breezed to my side. She wore a gown of pure white, little more than a slip of silk that showed off her generous curves. Indeed, a glance over her shoulder revealed Azrael staring blatantly at the back view of it. Cassian and the stranger already too deep in conversation to notice what had drawn the spymaster's attention. For a moment, the ravenous hunger on Azrael's face made my stomach tighten. I'd remembered feeling like that. Remembered how it felt to yield to it. How I'd come close to doing that the other night. Moore said,
"It won't be long now."
"Until what?" No one had told me what to expect, as they hadn't wanted to ruin the surprise of Starfall.
"Until the fun."
I surveyed the party around us.
"This isn't the fun?"
Moore lifted an eyebrow.
"None of us really care about this part. Once it starts, you'll see."
She took a sip of her sparkling wine.
"That's some dress.
You're lucky Amryn is hiding in her little attic, or she'd probably steal it right off you, the vain drake."
She won't take time off from decoding? Yes and no. Something about Starfall disturbs her, she claims. Who knows? She probably does it to be contrary. Even as she spoke, her words were distant, her face a bit tight. I said quietly, "Are you ready for tomorrow?" Tomorrow, when we'd leave Valaris to keep anyone from noticing our movements in this area. More, Asriel had told me over breakfast that morning, would return to the Court of Nightmares to check in on her father's recovery. Probably not the best place to discuss our plans, but Moore shrugged. I don't have any choice but to be ready. I'll come with you to the camp, then go my way afterward. Cassian will be happy about that, I said, even if Asriel was the one trying his best not to stare at her. Moore snorted. Maybe. I lifted a brow. So you two... Another shrug. Once. Well, not even. I was 17. He wasn't even a year older. When everything had happened. But there was no darkness on her face as she sighed. Cauldron, that was a long time ago. I visited Rhys for 2 weeks when he was training in the war camp, and Cassian, Asriel, and I became friends. One night, Rhys and his mother had to go back to the Night Court, and Asriel went with them, so Cassian and I were left alone. And that night, one thing led to another, and... I wanted Cassian to be the one who did it. I wanted to choose. A third shrug. I wondered if Asriel had wished to be the one she chose instead. If he'd ever admitted it to Moore, or Rhys. If he resented that he'd been away that night, that Moore hadn't considered him. Rhys came back the next morning, and when he learned what had happened... She laughed under her breath. We try not to talk about the incident. He and Cassian. I've never seen them fight like that. Hopefully I never will again. I know Rhys wasn't pissed about my virginity, but rather the danger that losing it had put me in. Asriel was even angrier about it, though he let Rhys do the walloping. They knew what my family would do for debasing myself with a bastard-born lesser fairy. She brushed a hand over her abdomen, as if she could feel the nail they'd spiked through it. They were right. So you and Cassian, I said, wanting to move on from it, that darkness. You were never together again after that? No, Moore said, laughing quietly. I was desperate, reckless that night. I'd picked him not just for his kindness, but also because I wanted my first time to be with one of the legendary Illyrian warriors. I wanted to lie with the greatest of Illyrian warriors, actually. And I'd taken one look at Cassian and known. After I got what I wanted, after everything, I didn't like that it caused a rift with him and Rhys, or even him and Az, so never again. And you were never with anyone after it? Not the cold, beautiful shadow singer who tried so hard not to watch her with longing on his face? I've had lovers, Moore clarified, but I get bored. And Cassian has had them, too, so don't get that unrequited love, moony woo-woo look. He just wants what he can't have. And it's irritated him for centuries that I walked away and never looked back. Oh, it drives him insane, Rhys said from behind me, and I jumped. But the High Lord was circling me. I crossed my arms as he paused and smirked. You look like a woman again. You really know how to compliment females, cousin, Moore said, and patted him on the shoulder as she spotted an acquaintance and went to say hello. I tried not to look at Rhys, who was in a black jacket, casually unbuttoned at the top so that the white shirt beneath, also unbuttoned at the neck, showed the tattoos on his chest peeking through. Tried not to look, and failed. Do you plan to ignore me some more? I said coolly. I'm here now, aren't I? I wouldn't want you to call me a hateful coward again.
I opened my mouth, but felt all the wrong words start to come out. So I shut it and looked for Azriel or Cassian or anyone who might talk to me. Going up to a stranger was starting to sound appealing when Rhys said a bit hoarsely,
I wasn't punishing you, I needed time.
I didn't want to have this conversation here, with so many people listening. So I gestured to the party and said, Will you please tell me what this gathering is about? Rhysand stepped up behind me, snorting as he said into my ear,
Look up.
Indeed, as I did so, the crowd hushed. No speech for your guests? I murmured. Easy, I just wanted it to be easy between us again.
Tonight's not about me, though my presence is appreciated and noted, he said. Tonight's about that.
As he pointed, a star vaulted across the sky, brighter and closer than any I'd seen before. The crowd and city below cheered, raising their glasses as it passed right overhead, and only when it had disappeared over the curve of the horizon did they drink deeply. I leaned back a step into Rhys and quickly stepped away out of his heat and power and scent. We'd done enough damage in a similar position at the Court of Nightmares. Another star crossed the sky, twirling and twisting over itself as if it were reveling in its own sparkling beauty. It was chased by another and another until a brigade of them were unleashed from the edge of the horizon, like 1,000 archers had loosed them from mighty bows. The stars cascaded over us, filling the world with white and blue light. They were like living fireworks, and my breath lodged in my throat as the stars kept on falling and falling. I'd never seen anything so beautiful. And when the sky was full with them, when the stars raced and danced and flowed across the world, the music began. Wherever they were, people began dancing, swaying and twirling, some grabbing hands and spinning, spinning, spinning to the drums, the strings, the glittering harps. Not like the grinding and thrusting of the Court of Nightmares, but joyous, peaceful dancing, for the love of sound and movement and life. I lingered with Rhysand at the edge of it, caught between watching the people dancing on the patio, hands upraised, and the stars streaming past, closer and closer until I swore I could have touched them if I'd leaned out. And there were Mor and Azriel, and Cassian, the three of them dancing together, Mor's head tipped back to the sky, arms up, the starlight gleaming on the pure white of her gown, dancing as if it might be her last time, flowing between Azriel and Cassian like the three of them were one unit, one being. I looked behind me to find Rhys watching them, his face soft, sad. Separated for 50 years and reunited, only to be cleaved apart so soon to fight again for their freedom. Rhys caught my gaze and said,
Come, there's a better view, quieter.
He held a hand out to me. That sorrow, that weight lingered in his eyes, and I couldn't bear to see it. Just as I couldn't bear to see my three friends dancing together as if it was the last time they'd ever do it. Rhys led me to a small private balcony jutting from the upper level of the House of Wind. On the patios below, the music still played, the people still danced, the stars wheeling by, close and swift.
He let go as I took a seat on the balcony rail. I immediately decided against it as I beheld the drop and backed away a healthy step.
Rhys chuckled.
If you fell, you know I'd bother to save you before you hit the ground.
But not until I was close to death?
Maybe.
I leaned a hand against the rail, peering at the stars whizzing past. As punishment for what I said to you?
I said some horrible things, too, he murmured.
I didn't mean it, I blurted. I meant it more about myself than you, and I'm sorry. He watched the stars for a moment before he replied.
You were right, though. I stayed away because you were right, though I'm glad to hear my absence felt like a punishment.
I snorted, but was grateful for the humor, for the way he'd always been able to amuse me. Any news with the orb or the queens?
Nothing yet. We're waiting for them to deign to reply.
We were silent again, and I studied the stars. They're not stars at all.
No.
Rhys came up beside me at the rail.
Our ancestors thought they were, but they're just spirits on a yearly migration to somewhere. Why they picked this day to appear here, no one knows.
I felt his eyes upon me and tore my gaze from the shooting stars. Light and shadow passed over his face. The cheers and music of the city, far, far below, were barely audible over the crowd gathered at the house. There must be hundreds of them, I managed to say, dragging my stare back to the stars whizzing past.
Thousands, he said. They'll keep coming until dawn. Or I hope they will. There were less and less of them the last time I witnessed starfall.
Before Amarantha had locked him away. What's happening to them? I looked in time to see him shrug. Something twanged in my chest.
I wish I knew. But they keep coming back despite it.
Why?
Why does anyone cling to something? Maybe they love wherever they're going so much that it's worth it. Maybe they'll keep coming back until there's only one star left. Maybe that one star will make the trip forever, out of the hope that someday, if it keeps coming back often enough, another star will find it again.
I frowned at the wine in my hand. That's a very sad thought.
Indeed.
Rhys rested his forearms on the balcony edge, close enough for my fingers to touch if I dared. A calm, full silence enveloped us. Too many words. I still had too many words in me. I don't know how much time passed, but it must have been a while, because when he spoke again, I jolted.
Every year that I was under the mountain and starfall came around, Amarantha made sure that I serviced her the entire night. Starfall is no secret, even to outsiders. Even the Court of Nightmares crawls out of the hewn city to look up at the sky. So she knew. She knew what it meant to me.
I stopped hearing the celebrations around us. I'm sorry. It was all I could offer.
I got through it by reminding myself that my friends were safe, that Valaris was safe. Nothing else mattered so long as I had that. She could use my body however she wanted. I didn't care.
So why aren't you down there with them? I asked, even as I tucked the horror of what had been done to him into my heart.
They don't know what she did to me on Starfall. I don't want it to ruin their night.
I don't think it would. They'd be happy if you let them shoulder the burden.
The same way you rely on others to help with your own troubles?
We stared at each other, close enough to share breath. And maybe all those words bottled up in me? Maybe I didn't need them right now. My fingers grazed his. Warm and sturdy, patient, as if waiting to see what else I might do. Maybe it was the wine, but I stroked a finger down his. And as I turned to him more fully, something blinding and tinkling slammed into my face. I reeled back, crying out as I bent over, shielding my face against the light that I could still see against my shut eyes.
Rhys let out a startled laugh.
A laugh? And when I realized that my eyes hadn't been singed out of their sockets, I whirled on him.
I could have been blinded, I hissed, shoving him.
He took a look at my face and burst out laughing again. Real laughter, open and delighted and lovely. I wiped at my face, and when I pulled my hands down, I gaped. Pale green light, like drops of paint, glowed in flecks on my hand.
Splattered star spirit. I didn't know if I should be horrified or amused or disgusted.
When I went to rub it off, Rhys caught my hands.
Don't, he said, still laughing. It looks like your freckles are glowing.
My nostrils flared, and I went to shove him again, not caring if my new strength knocked him off the balcony. He could summon wings. He could deal with it. He sidestepped me, veering toward the balcony rail, but not fast enough to avoid the careening star that collided with the side of his face. He leaped back with a curse. I laughed, the sound rasping out of me. Not a chuckle or snort, but a cackling laugh. And I laughed again and again as he lowered his hands from his eyes. The entire left side of his face had been hit. Like heavenly war paint, that's what it looked like.
I could see why he didn't want me to wipe mine away.
Rhys was examining his hands, covered in the dust, and I stepped toward him, peering at the way it glowed and glittered. He went still as death as I took one of his hands in my own and traced the star shape on the top of his palm, playing with the glimmer and shadows until it looked like one of the stars that had hit us. His fingers tightened on mine, and I looked up. He was smiling at me, and looked so un-High Lord-like with the glowing dust on the side of his face that I grinned back. I hadn't even realized what I'd done until his own smile faded and his mouth parted slightly. Smile again, he whispered. I hadn't smiled for him, ever, or laughed. Under the mountain, I had never grinned, never chuckled, and afterward. And this male before me, my friend, for all that he had done, I had never given him either. Even when I had just painted something. On him, for him, I'd paint it again. So I smiled at him, broad and without restraint.
You're exquisite, he breathed.
The air was too tight, too close between our bodies, between our joined hands. But I said, you owe me two thoughts. Back from when I first came here, tell me what you're thinking. Rhys rubbed his neck.
You want to know why I didn't speak or see you? Because I was so convinced you'd throw me out on my ass.
He dragged a hand through his hair and huffed a laugh.
I figured hiding was a better alternative.
Who would have thought the High Lord of the Night Court could be afraid of an illiterate human? I purred. He grinned, nudging me with an elbow. That's one. I pushed. Tell me another thought. His eyes fell on my mouth.
I'm wishing I could take back that kiss under the mountain.
I sometimes forgot that kiss, when he'd done it to keep Amarantha from knowing that Tamlin and I had been in the Forgotten Hall, tangled up together. Rhysand's kiss had been brutal, demanding, and yet, why? His gaze settled on the hand I'd painted instead, as if it were easier to face.
Because I didn't make it pleasant for you, and I was jealous and pissed off, and I knew you hated me.
Dangerous territory, I warned myself. No, honesty. That's what it was. Honesty and trust. I'd never had that with anyone. Rhys looked up, meeting my gaze. And whatever was on my face, I think it might have been mirrored on his, the hunger and longing and surprise. I swallowed hard, traced another line of stardust along the inside of his powerful wrist. I didn't think he was breathing. Do you want to dance with me? I whispered. He was silent for long enough that I lifted my head to scan his face. But his eyes were bright, silver-lined.
You want to dance?
He rasped, his fingers curling around mine. I pointed with my chin toward the celebration below. Down there, with them. Where the music beckoned, where life beckoned, where he should spend the night with his friends, and where I wanted to spend it with them too, even with the strangers in attendance. I did not mind stepping out of the shadows, did not mind even being in the shadows to begin with, so long as he was with me. My friend through so many dangers, who had fought for me when no one else would, even myself.
Of course I'll dance with you,
Rhys said, his voice still raw.
All night, if you wish.
Even if I step on your toes?
Even then.
He leaned in, brushing his mouth against my heated cheek. I closed my eyes at the whisper of a kiss, at the hunger that ravaged me in its wake, that might ravage Prithian. And all around us, as if the world itself were indeed falling apart, stars rained down. Bits of stardust glowed on his lips as he pulled away, as I stared up at him, breathless, while he smiled. The smile the world would likely never see. The smile he'd given up for the sake of his people, his lands. He said softly,
I am very glad I met you, Feyre.
I blinked away the burning in my eyes. Come on, I said, tugging on his hand. Let's go join the dance. Chapter 45. The Illyrian war camp deep in the northern mountains was freezing. Apparently, spring was still little more than a whisper in the region. Mor winnowed us all in, Rhysand and Cassian flanking us.
We had danced, all of us together, and I had never seen Rhys so happy, laughing with Azrael, drinking with Mor, bickering with Cassian. I danced with each of them, and when the night had shifted toward dawn and the music became soft and honeyed, I had let Rhys take me in his arms and dance with me, slowly, until the other guests had left, until Mor was asleep on a settee in the dining room, until the gold disk of the sun gilded Valaris. He'd flown me back to the townhouse through the pink and purple and gray of the dawn, both of us silent, and had kissed my brow once before walking down the hall to his own room. I didn't lie to myself about why I waited for 30 minutes to see if my door would open, or to at least hear a knock, but nothing. We were bleary-eyed but polite at the lunch table hours later, Mor and Cassian unusually quiet, talking mostly to Amryn and Azrael, who had come to bid us farewell. Amryn would continue working on the book until we received the second half, if we received it. The Shadow Singer was heading out to gather information and manage his spies stationed at the other courts and attempting to break into the human one. I managed to speak to them, but most of my energy went into not looking at Rhysand or thinking about the feeling of his body pressed to mine as we danced for hours, that brush of his mouth on my skin. I'd barely been able to fall asleep because of it. Traitor.
Even if I'd left Tamlin, I was a traitor. I'd been gone for 2 months. Just 2. In fairy terms, it was probably considered less than a day. Tamlin had given me so much, done so many things for me and my family. And here I was, wanting another male, even as I hated Tamlin for what he'd done, how he'd failed me. Traitor, The word continued echoing in my head as I stood at Moore's side, Rhys and Cassian a few steps ahead, and peered out at the wind-blown camp. Moore had barely given Azrael more than a brief embrace before bidding him goodbye. And for all the world, the spymaster looked like he didn't care, until he gave me a swift, warning look.
I was still torn between amusement and outrage at the assumption I'd stick my nose into his business.
Indeed.
Built near the top of a forested mountain, the Illyrian camp was all bare rock and mud, interrupted only by crude, easy-to-pack tents centered around large fire pits. Near the tree line, a dozen permanent buildings had been erected of the gray mountain stone. Smoke puffed from their chimneys against the brisk, cloudy morning, occasionally swirled by the passing wings overhead. So many winged males soaring past on their way to other camps or in training. Indeed, on the opposite end of the camp, in a rocky area that ended in a sheer plunge off the mountain, were the sparring and training rings. Racks of weapons were left out to the elements. In the chalk-painted rings, males of all ages now trained with sticks and swords and shields and spears, fast, lethal, brutal. No complaints, no shouts of pain. There was no warmth here, no joy. Even the houses at the other end of the camp had no personal touches, as if they were used only for shelter or storage. And this was where Rhys, Azrael, and Cassian had grown up, where Cassian had been cast out to survive on his own. It was so cold that even bundled in my fur-lined leather, I was shivering. I couldn't imagine a child going without adequate clothing or shelter for a night, much less 8 years. Moore's face was pale, tight. "I hate this place," she said under her breath, the heat of it clouding the air in front of us. "It should be burned to the ground." Cassian and Rhys were silent as a tall, broad-shouldered older male approached, flanked by five other Illyrian warriors, wings all tucked in, hands within casual reach of their weapons. No matter that Rhys could rip their minds apart without lifting a finger. They each wore siphons of varying colors on the backs of their hands, the stones smaller than Azrael and Cassian's, and only one, not like the seven apiece that my two friends wore to manage their tremendous power. The male in front said,
"Another camp inspection? Your dog," he jerked his chin at Cassian, "was just here the other week. The girls are training."
Cassian crossed his arms.
"I don't see them in the ring."
"They do chores first," the male said,
shoulders pushing back and wings flaring slightly.
"Then when they've finished, they get to train."
A low snarl slipped past Moore's mouth, and the male turned our way. He stiffened. Moore flashed him a wicked smile.
"Hello, Lord Devlin."
The leader of the camp, then. He gave her a dismissive once-over and looked back to Rhys. Cassian's warning growl rumbled in my stomach. Rhys said at last,
"Pleasant as it always is to see you, Devlin, there are two matters at hand. First, the girls, as you were clearly told by Cassian, are to train before chores, not after. Get them out on the pitch. Now."
I shuddered at the pure command in that tone. He continued,
"Second, we'll be staying here for the time being. Clear out my mother's old house. No need for a housekeeper. We'll look after ourselves."
"The house is occupied by my top warriors."
"Then unoccupy it," Rhysand said simply, "and have them clean it before they do." The voice of the High Lord of the Night Court, who delighted in pain and made his enemies tremble. Devlin sniffed at me. I poured every bit of cranky exhaustion into holding his narrowed gaze.
"Another like that creature you bring here? I thought she was the only one of her ilk."
"Amryn," Rhys drawled, "sends her regards, and as for this one..."
I tried not to flinch away from meeting his stare. "She's mine," he said quietly, but viciously enough that Devlin and his warriors nearby heard. "And if any of you lay a hand on her, you lose that hand, and then you lose your head." I tried not to shiver, as Cassian and Moore showed no reaction at all. "And once Feyre is done killing you," Rhys smirked, "then I'll grind your bones to dust." I almost laughed,
but the warriors were now assessing the threat Rhys had established me as, and coming up short with answers. I gave them all a small smile anyway, one I'd seen Amryn make 100 times. Let them wonder what I could do if provoked.
"We're heading out," Rhys said to Cassian and Moore, not even bothering to dismiss Devlin before walking toward the tree line.
"We'll be back at nightfall."
He gave his cousin a look.
"Try to stay out of trouble, please. Devlin hates us the least of the warlords, and I don't feel like finding another camp."
Mother above, the others must be unpleasant if Devlin was the mildest of them. Moore winked at us both.
"I'll try." Rhys just shook his head and said to Cassian,
"Check on the forces, then make sure those girls are practicing like they should be. If Devlin or the others object, do what you have to."
Cassian grinned in a way that showed he'd be more than happy to do exactly that. He was the High Lord's general, and yet Devlin called him a dog. I didn't want to imagine what it had been like for Cassian without that title growing up. Then finally, Rhys looked at me again, his eyes shuttered.
"Let's go."
"You heard from my sisters?"
A shake of the head. "No. Azrael is checking today if they received a response. You and I?"
The wind rustled his hair as he smirked.
"We're going to train."
"Where?" He gestured to the sweeping land beyond, to the forested steppes he'd once mentioned.
"Away from any potential casualties."
He offered his hand as his wings flared, his body preparing for flight. But all I heard were those two words he'd said, echoing against the steady beat of "traitor, traitor."
"She's mine."
Being in Rhys's arms again, against his body, was a test of stubbornness, for both of us, to see who'd speak about it first. We'd been flying over the most beautiful mountains I'd ever seen, snowy and flecked with pines, heading toward rolling steppes beyond them when I said,
"You're training female Illyrian warriors?"
"Trying to."
Rhys gazed across the brutal landscape.
"I banned wing clipping a long, long time ago, but at the more zealous camps, deep within the mountains, they do it. And when Amarantha took over, even the milder camps started doing it again. To keep their women safe, they claimed. For the past 100 years, Cassian has been trying to build an aerial fighting unit amongst the females, trying to prove that they have a place on the battlefield. So far, he's managed to train a few dedicated warriors, but the males make life so miserable that many of them left. As for the girls in training, a hiss of breath. It's a long road. But Devlin is one of the few who even lets the girls train without a tantrum."
I'd hardly call disobeying orders without a tantrum.
"Some camps issued decrees that if a female was caught training, she was to be deemed unmarriageable. I can't fight against things like that, not without slaughtering the leaders of each camp and personally raising each and every one of their offspring."
"And yet your mother loved them, and you three wear their tattoos."
"I got the tattoos in part for my mother, in part to honor my brothers, who fought every day of their lives for the right to wear them."
"Why do you let Devlin speak to Cassian like that?"
"Because I know when to pick my fights with Devlin, and I know Cassian would be pissed if I stepped in to crush Devlin's mind like a grape when he could handle it himself."
A whisper of cold went through me. "Have you thought about doing it?"
"I did just now.
But most camp lords never would have given the three of us a shot at the blood rite. Devlin let a half-breed and two bastards take it, and did not deny us our victory.
Pine dusted with fresh snow blurred beneath us. What's the blood rite?
So many questions today.
I squeezed his shoulder hard enough to hurt, and he chuckled.
You go unarmed into the mountains, magic band, no siphons, wings bound, with no supplies or clothes beyond what you have on you. You and every other Illyrian male who wants to move from novice to true warrior, a few hundred head into the mountains at the start of the week, not all come out at the end.
The frost-kissed landscape rolled on forever, unyielding as the warriors who ruled over it. Do you kill each other?
Most try to. For food and clothes, for vengeance, for glory between feuding clans. Devlin allowed us to take the right, but also made sure Cassian, Azriel, and I were dumped in different locations.
What happened?
We found each other. Killed our way across the mountains to get to each other. Turns out, a good number of Illyrian males wanted to prove they were stronger, smarter than us. Turns out they were wrong.
I dared to look at his face. For a heartbeat, I could see it. Blood spattered, savage, fighting and slaughtering to get to his friends, to protect and save them. Rhys set us down in a clearing, the pine trees towering so high they seemed to caress the underside of the heavy gray clouds passing on the swift wind.
So, you're not using magic, but I am, I said, taking a few steps from him.
Our enemy is keyed in on my powers. You, however, remain invisible.
He waved his hand.
Let's see what all your practicing has amounted to.
I didn't feel like it. I just said, When did you meet Tamlin? I knew what Rhysand's father had done. I hadn't let myself think too much about it. About how he'd killed Tamlin's father and brothers, and mother. But now, after last night, after the Court of Nightmares, I had to know. Rhys's face was a mask of patience.
Show me something impressive and I'll tell you. Magic for answers.
I know what sort of game you're playing. I cut myself off at the hint of a smirk. Very well. I held out my hand before me, palm cupped, and willed silence into my veins, my mind. Silence and calm and wait, like being underwater. In my hand, a butterfly of water flapped and danced. Rhys smiled a bit, but the amusement died as he said,
Tamlin was younger than me, born when the war started. But after the war, when he'd matured, we got to know each other at various court functions. Rhys clenched his jaw. He seemed decent for a High Lord's son. Better than Baron's brood at the Autumn Court. Tamlin's brothers were equally as bad, though. Worse. And they knew Tamlin would take the title one day. And to a half-breed Illyrian who'd had to prove himself, defend his power, I saw what Tamlin went through. I befriended him. Sought him out whenever I was able to get away from the war camps or court. Maybe it was pity, but I taught him some Illyrian techniques.
Did anyone know? He raised his brows, giving a pointed look to my hand.
I scowled at him and summoned songbirds of water,
letting them flap around the clearing as they'd flown around my bathing room at the summer court.
Cassian and Azriel knew, Rhys went on. My family knew, and disapproved.
His eyes were chips of ice.
But Tamlin's father was threatened by it, by me. And because he was weaker than both me and Tamlin, he wanted to prove to the world that he wasn't. My mother and sister were to travel to the Illyrian war camp to see me. I was supposed to meet them halfway,
but I was busy training a new unit and decided to stay.
My stomach turned over and over and over, and I wished I had something to lean against, as Rhys said.
Tamlin's father, brothers, and Tamlin himself set out into the Illyrian wilderness, having heard from Tamlin, from me, where my mother and sister would be, that I had plans to see them. I was supposed to be there. I wasn't. And they slaughtered my mother and sister anyway.
I began shaking, eyes burning. I didn't know what I was trying to deny or erase or condemn.
It should have been me, he said.
And I understood. Understood what he'd said that day I'd wept before Cassian in the training pit.
They put their heads in boxes and sent them down the river to the nearest camp. Tamlin's father kept their wings as trophies. I'm surprised you didn't see them pinned in the study.
I was going to vomit. I was going to fall to my knees and weep.
But Rhys looked at the menagerie of water animals I'd crafted and said, "What else?"
Perhaps it was the cold, perhaps it was his story, but hoarfrost cracked in my veins and the wild song of a winter wind howled in my heart. I felt it then, how easy it would be to jump between them, join them together, my powers.
Each one of my animals halted midair and froze into perfectly carved bits of ice. One by one, they dropped to the earth and shattered. They were one. They had come from the same dark origin, the same eternal well of power. Once, long ago, before language was invented and the world was new. Rhys merely continued, "When I heard, when my father heard, I wasn't wholly truthful to you when I told you under the mountain that my father killed Tamlin's father and brothers. I went with him, helped him. We winnowed to the edge of the spring court that night, then went the rest of the way on foot, to the manor. I slew Tamlin's brothers on sight, I held their minds, and rendered them helpless while I cut them into pieces, then melted their brains inside their skulls. And when I got to the High Lord's bedroom, he was dead. And my father had killed Tamlin's mother as well."
I couldn't stop shaking my head.
My father had promised not to touch her, that we weren't the kind of males who would do that. But he lied to me and he did it anyway. And then he went for Tamlin's room.
I couldn't breathe. Couldn't breathe, as Rhys said.
I tried to stop him. He didn't listen. He was going to kill him too. And I couldn't. After all the death, I was done. I didn't care that Tamlin had been there, had allowed them to kill my mother and sister, that he'd come to kill me because he didn't want to risk standing against them. I was done with death. So I stopped my father before the door. He tried to go through me. Tamlin opened the door, saw us, smelled the blood already leaking into the hallway. And I didn't even get to say a word before Tamlin killed my father in one blow. I felt the power shift to me, even as I saw it shift to him. And we just looked at each other as we were both suddenly crowned High Lord. And then I ran.
He'd murdered Rhysand's family. The High Lord I'd loved. He'd murdered his friend's family, and when I'd asked him how his family died, he'd merely told me a rival court had done it. Rhysand had done it, and...
He didn't tell you any of that.
I'm sorry, I breathed, my voice hoarse.
What do you possibly have to be sorry for?
I didn't know. I didn't know that he'd done that. And Rhys thought I'd been comparing him against Tamlin, as if I held him to be some paragon.
Why did you stop? He said.
motioning to the ice shards on the pine needle carpet. The people he'd loved most, gone. Slaughtered in cold blood. Slaughtered by Tamlin. The clearing exploded in flame. The pine needles vanished, the trees groaned, and even Rhys swore as fire swept through the clearing, my heart, and devoured everything in its path. No wonder he'd made Tamlin beg that day I'd been formally introduced to him. No wonder he'd relished every chance to taunt Tamlin. Maybe my presence here was just too... No. I knew that wasn't true. I knew my being here had nothing to do with what was between him and Tamlin, though he no doubt enjoyed interrupting our wedding day. Saved me from that wedding day, actually.
Feyre,
Rhys said as the fire died. But there it was, crackling inside my veins, crackling beside veins of ice and water and darkness. Embers flared around us, floating in the air, and I sent out a breath of soothing dark, a breath of ice and water, as if it were a wind at dawn, sweeping clean the world. The power did not belong to the High Lords, not any longer. It belonged to me, as I belonged only to me, as my future was mine to decide, to forge. Once I discovered and mastered what the others had given me, I could weave them together into something new, something of every court, and none of them. Flame hissed as it was extinguished so thoroughly that no smoke remained. But I met Rhys's stare, his eyes a bit wide as he watched me work. I rasped, "Why didn't you tell me sooner?" The sight of him in his Illyrian fighting gear, wings spread across the entire width of the clearing, his blade peeking over his shoulder. There, in that hole in my chest, I saw the image there. At first interpretation, he looked terrifying, vengeance and wrath incarnate. But if you came closer, the painting would show the beauty on his face. The wings flared not to hurt, but to carry me from danger, to shield me.
"I didn't want you to think I was trying to turn you against him," he said.
The painting, I could see it, feel it. I wanted to paint it. I wanted to paint. I didn't wait for him to stretch out his hand before I went to him. And looking up into his face, I said, "I want to paint you." He gently lifted me into his arms.
"Nude would be best," he said in my ear.
Chapter 46. I was so cold, I might never be warm again. Even during winter in the mortal realm, I'd managed to find some kernel of heat, but after nearly emptying my cache of magic that afternoon, even the roaring hearth fire couldn't thaw the chill around my bones. Did spring ever come to this blasted place?
"They pick these locations,"
Cassian said across from me as we dined on mutton stew around the table tucked into the corner of the front of the stone house.
"Just to ensure the strongest among us survive."
"Horrible people," Moore grumbled into her earthenware bowl. "I don't blame Az for never wanting to come here."
"I take it training the girls went well?" Rhys drawled from beside me,
his thigh so close, its warmth brushed my own. Cassian drained his mug of ale.
"I got one of them to confess they hadn't received a lesson in 10 days. They'd all been too busy with chores, apparently." "No born fighters in this lot?"
"3, actually," Moore said. 3 out of 10 isn't bad at all. The others, I'd be happy if they just learned to defend themselves, but those 3, they've got the instinct, the claws. It's their stupid families that want them clipped and breeding." I rose from the table, taking my bowl to the sink tucked into the wall. The house was simple, but still bigger and in better condition than our old cottage. The front room served as kitchen, living area, and dining room, with three doors in the back. One for the cramped bathing room, one for the storage room, and one being a back door, because no true Illyrian, according to Rhys, ever made a home with only one exit.
"When do you head for the Hewn City tomorrow?"
Cassian said to her, quietly enough that I knew it was probably time to head upstairs. Moore scraped the bottom of her bowl. Apparently, Cassian had made the stew. It hadn't been half bad.
"After breakfast? Before? I don't know. Maybe in the afternoon when they're all just waking up."
Rhys was a step behind me, bowl in hand, and motioned to leave my dirty dish in the sink. He inclined his head toward the steep, narrow stairs at the back of the house. They were wide enough to fit only one Illyrian warrior, another safety measure, and I glanced at the table one last time before disappearing upstairs. Moore and Cassian both stared at their empty bowls of food, softly talking for once. Every step upward, I could feel Rhys at my back, the heat of him, the ebb and flow of his power. And in this small space, the scent of him washed over me, beckoned to me. Upstairs was dark, illuminated by the small window at the end of the hall, and the moonlight streaming in through a thin gap in the pines around us. There were only two doors up here, and Rhys pointed to one of them.
"You and Moore can share tonight. Just tell her to shut up if she babbles too much."
I wouldn't, though. If she needed to talk, to distract herself and be ready for what was to come tomorrow, I'd listen until dawn. He put a hand on his own doorknob, but I leaned against the wood of my door. It'd be so easy to take the three steps to cross the hall. To run my hands over that chest, trace those beautiful lips with my own. I swallowed as he turned to me. I didn't want to think what it meant, what I was doing, what this was, whatever it was, between us. Because things between us had never been normal, not from the very first moment we'd met on Kalanmai. I'd been unable to easily walk away from him then, when I'd thought he was deadly, dangerous. But now? Traitor, traitor, traitor. He opened his mouth, but I had already slipped inside my room and shut the door. Freezing rain trickled through the pine boughs as I stalked through the mists in my Illyrian fighting leathers, armed with a bow, quiver, and knives, shivering like a wet dog. Rhys was a few hundred feet behind, carrying our packs. We'd flown deep into the forest steppes, far enough that we'd have to spend the night out here, far enough that no one and nothing might see another glorious explosion of flame and temper, as Rhys had put it. Azriel hadn't brought word from my sisters of the Queen's status, so we had time to spare. Though Rhys certainly hadn't looked like it when he informed me that morning. But at least we wouldn't have to camp out here. Rhys had promised there was some sort of wayfarer's inn nearby. I turned toward where Rhys trailed behind me, spotting his massive wings first. Moore had set off before I'd even been awake, and Cassian had been pissy and on edge during breakfast. So much so that I'd been glad to leave as soon as I'd finished my porridge, and felt slightly bad for the Illyrians who had to deal with him that day. Rhys paused once he caught up, and even with the trees and rain between us, I could see his brows lift in silent question of why I'd paused. We hadn't spoken of Starfall or the Court of Nightmares, and last night, as I twisted and turned in the tiny bed, I'd decided. Fun and distraction. It didn't need to be complicated. Keeping things purely physical, well, it didn't feel like as much of a betrayal. I lifted a hand, signaling Rhys to stay where he was. After yesterday, I didn't want him too close, lest I burn him, or worse. He sketched a dramatic bow, and I rolled my eyes as I stalked to the stream ahead, contemplating where I might indeed try to play with Baron's fire. My fire. Every step away, I could feel Reese's stare devouring me. Or maybe that was through the bond, brushing against my mental shields. Flashes of hunger so insatiable that it was an effort to focus on the task ahead and not the feeling of what his hands had been like, stroking my thighs, pushing me against him. I could have sworn I felt a trickle of amusement on the other side of my mental shield, too. I hissed and made a vulgar gesture over my shoulder, even as I let my shield drop, just a bit. That amusement turned into full delight, and then a lick of pleasure that went straight down my spine. Lower. My face heated, and a twig cracked under my boot, as loud as lightning. I gritted my teeth. The ground sloped toward a gray, gushing stream, fast enough that it had to be fed by the towering, snow-blasted mountains in the distance. Good. This spot was good. An extra supply of water to drown any flames that might escape. Plenty of open space. The wind blew away from me, tugging my scent southward, deeper into the forest as I opened my mouth to tell Reese to stay back. With that wind and the roaring stream, it was no surprise that I didn't hear them until they had surrounded me.
Feyre.
I whirled, arrow knocked and aimed at the source of the voice. Four spring court sentinels stalked from the trees behind me like wraiths, armed to the teeth and wide-eyed. Two I knew, Brawn and Hart. And behind them stood Lucien. Chapter 47. If I wanted to escape, I could either face the stream or face them. But Lucien. His red hair was tied back, and there wasn't a hint of finery on him. Just armored leather, swords, knives. His metal eye roamed over me, his golden skin pale.
"We've been hunting for you for over 2 months," he breathed,
now scanning the woods, the stream, the sky. "Reese, Cauldron, save me. Reese was too far back, and..."
"How did you find me?"
My steady, cold voice wasn't one I recognized, but hunting for me, as if I were indeed prey. If Tamlin was here, my blood went icier than the freezing rain now sluicing down my face into my clothes.
"Someone tipped us off you'd been out here, but it was luck that we caught your scent in the wind, and..."
Lucien took a step toward me.
I stepped back, only 3 feet between me and the stream.
Lucian's eye widened slightly.
"We need to get out of here. Tamlin's been..." "He hasn't been himself. I'll take you right to..."
"No," I breathed. The word rasped through the rain, the stream, the pine forest. The four sentinels glanced between each other, then to the arrow I kept aimed. Lucien took me in again. And I could see what he was now gleaning, the Illyrian fighting leathers, the color and fullness that had returned to my face, my body, and the silent steel of my eyes.
"Feyre," he said, holding out a hand, "let's go home."
I didn't move. That stopped being my home the day you let him lock me up inside of it. Lucian's mouth tightened.
"It was a mistake. We all make mistakes. He's sorry. More sorry than you realize, so am I."
He stepped toward me, and I backed up another few inches. Not much space remained between me and the gushing waters below. Cassian's training crashed into me, as if all the lessons he'd been drilling into me each morning were a net that caught me as I free fell into my rising panic. Once Lucien touched me, he'd winnow us out. Not far. He wasn't that powerful, but he was fast. He'd jump miles away, then farther and farther until Reese couldn't reach me. He knew Reese was here.
"Feyre,"
Lucien pleaded, and dared another step, his hand outraised.
my arrow angled toward him, my bowstring groaning. I'd never realized that while Lucian had been trained as a warrior, Cassian, Azriel, Moore, and Rhys were warriors. Cassian could wipe Lucian off the face of the earth in a single blow. "Put the arrow down," Lucian murmured, like he was soothing a wild animal. Behind him, the four sentinels closed in, herding me. The High Lord's pet and possession. "Don't," I breathed, "touch me." "You don't understand the mess we're in, Feyre. I need you home now." I didn't want to hear it. Peering at the stream below, I calculated my odds. The look cost me. Lucian lunged, hand out. One touch, that was all it'd take. I was not the High Lord's pet any longer. And maybe the world should learn that I did indeed have fangs. Lucian's finger grazed the sleeve of my leather jacket, and I became smoke and ash and night. The world stilled and bent, and there was Lucian, lunging so slowly for what was now blank space as I stepped around him, as I hurtled for the trees behind the sentinels. I stopped, and time resumed its natural flow. Lucian staggered, catching himself before he went over the cliff, and whirled, eye wide to discover me now standing behind his sentinels. Brawn and Hart flinched and backed away. From me. And from Rhysand at my side. Lucian froze. I made my face a mirror of ice, the unfeeling twin to the cruel amusement on Rhysand's features as he picked at a fleck of lint on his dark tunic. Dark, elegant clothes. No wings, no fighting leathers. The unruffled, fine clothes? Another weapon. To hide just how skilled and powerful he was, to hide where he came from and what he loved. A weapon worth the cost of the magic he'd used to hide it, even if it put us at risk of being tracked. "Little Lucian," Rhys purred. "Didn't the Lady of the Autumn Court ever tell you that when a woman says no, she means it?" "Prick," Lucian snarled, storming past his sentinels but not daring to touch his weapons. "You filthy, whoring prick." I loosed a growl. Lucian's eyes sliced to me, and he said with quiet horror, "What have you done, Feyre?" "Don't come looking for me again," I said with equal softness. "He'll never stop looking for you. Never stop waiting for you to come home." The words hit me in the gut, like they were meant to. It must have shown in my face because Lucian pressed, "What did he do to you? Did he take your mind and—" "Enough," Rhys said, angling his head with that casual grace. "Feyre and I are busy. Go back to your lands before I send your heads as a reminder to my old friend about what happens when Spring Court flunkies set foot in my territory." The freezing rain slid down the neck of my clothes, down my back. Lucian's face was deathly pale. "You made your point, Feyre. Now come home." "I'm not a child playing games," I said through my teeth. That's how they'd seen me, in need of coddling, explaining, defending.
"Careful, Lucian," Rhysand drawled, "or Feyre darling will send you back in pieces, too."
"We are not your enemies, Feyre," Lucian pleaded. "Things got bad. Ianthe got out of hand, but it doesn't mean you give up."
"You gave up," I breathed. I felt even Rhys go still.
"You gave up on me," I said a bit more loudly. "You were my friend, and you picked him, picked obeying him, even when you saw what his orders and his rules did to me, even when you saw me wasting away day by day." "You have no idea how volatile those first few months were," Lucian snapped. "We needed to present a unified, obedient front,
and I was supposed to be the example to which all others in our court were held.
You saw what was happening to me, but you were too afraid of him to truly do anything about it.
It was fear. Lucian had pushed Tamlin, but to a point, he'd always yielded at the end.
I begged you,
I said, the words sharp and breathless.
I begged you so many times to help me, to get me out of the house, even for an hour. And you left me alone, or shoved me into a room with Ianthe, or told me to stick it out.
Lucian said too quietly, and I suppose the night court is so much better.
I remembered what I was supposed to know, to have experienced, what Lucian and the others could never know, not even if it meant forfeiting my own life. And I would, to keep Valaris safe, to keep Mor and Amran and Cassian and Azriel and Rhys safe.
I said to Lucian, low and quiet and as vicious as the talons that formed at the tips of my fingers, as vicious as the wondrous weight between my shoulder blades. When you spend so long trapped in darkness, Lucian, you find that the darkness begins to stare back. A pulse of surprise, of wicked delight against my mental shields, at the dark, membranous wings I knew were now poking over my shoulders. Every icy kiss of rain sent jolts of cold through me. Sensitive. So sensitive, these Illyrian wings. Lucian backed up a step.
What did you do to yourself?
I gave him a little smile. The human girl you knew died under the mountain. I have no interest in spending immortality as a High Lord's pet. Lucian started shaking his head.
Feyre,
tell Tamlin, I said, choking on his name, on the thought of what he'd done to Rhys, to his family. If he sends anyone else into these lands, I will hunt each and every one of you down, and I will demonstrate exactly what the darkness taught me. There was something like genuine pain on his face. I didn't care. I just watched him, unyielding and cold and dark. The creature I might one day have become if I had stayed at the Spring Court, if I had remained broken for decades, centuries, until I learned to quietly direct those shards of pain outward, learned to savor the pain of others. Lucian nodded to his sentinels. Brawn and Hart, wide-eyed and shaking, vanished with the other two. Lucian lingered for a moment, nothing but air and rain between us. He said softly to Rhysand, "You're dead. You and your entire cursed court." Then he was gone. I stared at the empty space where he'd been, waiting, not letting that expression off my face until a warm, strong finger traced a line down the edge of my right wing. It felt like having my ear breathed into. I shuddered, arching as a gasp came out of me. And then Rhys was in front of me, scanning my face, the wings behind me. How? Shape-shifting, I managed to say, watching the rain slide down his golden tan face. And it was distracting enough that the talons, the wings, the rippling darkness faded, and I was left light and cold in my own skin. Shape-shifting. At the sight of part of the history, the male I had not really let myself remember. Shape-shifting. A gift from Tamlin that I had not wanted or needed until now. Rhys's eyes softened. That was a very convincing performance. I gave him what he wanted to see, I murmured. We should find another spot. He nodded, and his tunic and pants vanished, replaced by those familiar fighting leathers, the wings, the sword. My warrior. Not my anything.
Are you all right? He said as he scooped me into his arms to fly us to another location.
I nestled into his warmth, savoring it.